Has he given you another series?
No, he won't give me one.
Give him another series, you swine.
Yeah, give me another series, you shit.
Hello, and welcome to Crash Bang Wallop, What a Podcast. Check out what this idiot did in America. I kid. Welcome to episode 26 of the New Generation Project podcast, where we honour the heroes of Hulkamania and analyse the architects of attitude. Except today, we don't watch any wrestling at all, really. Yes, you asked for it, you can't unask for it. Today, we take a look at both Baywatch and Thunder in Paradise. My name is Stuart Brooks, and I'm joined today by our very own Kai and Tai. It's Paul Takamichinuku Scrivens.
Stop making fun of my speech impediment.
And Adam, choppy, choppy, your pee-pee, Wykes Sam.
Oh, that's classic. Yeah.
That's not actually
sorry,
a person.
Sorry, I thought you were going in some kind of faux Japanese accent then.
No, I'm not going to do that.
He already did his Kim Jong-il voice the other episode, didn't he?
Yeah, you call me a racist. So I'm not going to do it again.
Good.
How are you both?
Well, I got a bit upset yesterday.
Oh, go on then, what was that?
Well, I went Christmas shopping.
Oh, well, going Christmas shopping two Saturdays before Christmas in town centre is not a good idea, Paul.
No, but my biggest frustration really was retailers,
right,
who can't figure out how to take my money when I want to give it to them, which for me is something of a
It's
minus.
Tantamount to a problem.
How are you trying to give it to them?
Think how you word things more carefully in the future.
Phrasing.
For example, I went to a popular jewellery shop.
H. Samuels.
Not that one. I'm not going to name it. But they need to, because they need to work this out for themselves, they need to think about their system for taking money.
Right.
Only having two tills and having it where about 80% of the stock is,
right,
when there's lots of people who want to view the stock, is not a good idea. They should perhaps just move the tills to a different area where there is nothing or nobody.
So they've got half an empty shop and half a rammed shop.
Pretty much that was my impression from it yesterday. It took an inordinately long time to take my money off me when I wanted to pay them. Not that I'm giving any clues as to what Mrs. Scrivens is getting for Christmas.
but it was from a jeweller's. How are you today, Adam, anyway?
I'm all right. Bit frustrated from watching Thunder in Paradise, but...
You're grumpy. I'll say it for you.
Yeah, I'm not in the best of moods.
Well, let's try and cheer Adam up, shall we?
Well, I too went Christmas shopping in town yesterday.
What's wrong with you two going Christmas shopping in town on a Saturday?
Well, I went to meet a friend and the Christmas shopping just came as like a side avenue.
Well, I work during the week. It's hard to...
Wednesday night.
Wednesday nights, okay.
Yeah, that
or Sundays.
That is much better. Sunday, no.
I can't really do Wednesday nights. Mrs. Scrivens goes to Pilates. Seriously. So Wednesday nights is really out of the question.
You could take baby Scrivs into town.
Yeah.
Not when it's like 9 o'clock, I can't.
Why not?
Well, in fact, what time do they open till on Wednesday?
Like 9 o'clock.
Yeah, I can't take him in at 9 o'clock because he should be in sleep.
You don't take him in at 9 o'clock. The shops close at 9 o'clock.
Take him
you
in
could
at
take
five.
Take him in at five.
You can do that. We know that.
Yeah. And it's something to consider.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's try and cheer Adam up anyway. I'm sure talking about Baywatch will do that.
Yeah, it should do.
Yeah. So before we get going today, I just want to add a couple of quick questions that were intended for our Q&A episode, but they were sent by private message and I forgot to put them in. So we'll try and answer them quickly here. They're all from Steve Hurst and are as follows. Number one, which of you is the biggest Partridge fan?
Me.
Yeah, it is definitely Paul.
Goes
yeah.
to Paul. Although he's never seen Banged Up Abroad.
Banged Up Abroad?
You've never seen Banged Up Abroad.
Two, would you consider doing a podcast about Partridge as a one-off?
Yes.
I'm not quite sure how we'd incorporate that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it would work.
Or how we could make it any more funny than it actually already is.
Yeah.
Or it would just be you doing Partridge impressions for 45 minutes.
Maybe it would just be me just reliving the script.
Yeah.
Would people
maybe
like
we
that?
Could do it like that Frasier episode where they do the radio play.
Oh, Ham. Yeah, Radio Ham. Or Ham Radio.
Number
Ham
radio. Three, which Partridge-related characters would make good wrestling gimmicks? I nominate Simon Fisher, the child prodigy.
Now that's a slightly obscure one because that's from the Know Me, Know You radio series.
Yeah.
But that is genius. And just for that one person who'd probably get it, Daddy, I've wet myself.
I get it. I've heard it.
You've heard it?
Yeah.
Brilliant. I love that. Simon Fisher would be very good. I like Tony Lemesma.
Right.
You know, because he could have a kind of sorcerer's gimmick.
Yeah.
Minnie Driver, when she was the transsexual. Was that Minnie Driver?
On Knowing Me, Knowing You.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So she could have some kind of Nicole Bass type thing.
Oh, we're talking about... Look at your hands. Great big flapping hands like a goalkeeper.
Yeah, that one.
My suggestion is that they just give the Michael character to Adrian Neville.
Yeah, that would be
good. And his gimmick is that no one understands him, and I don't know, like he works in WWE catering.
They did have another one on the radio series a long time ago that they did have kind of a vague member of kind of the outer royalty who Partridge was trying to get to admit that she wanted to be queen. And it's just like trying to outline the scenarios where that might happen. So if there was a minibus with lots of the inner royalty just falling off a cliff, then would you want to be the queen? Yes, of course you would. It's only natural. But she could have like kind of regal type gimmick, but female, because I don't think has that been done particularly?
No. Vicky Guerrero was basically Lynn, wasn't she, as like a general manager?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
You could have Tony Hares as like a Vince McMahon type character.
Tony Hares would be brilliant.
He could decide whether to commission people's matches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And people could ask him to smell his cheese.
Cheese.
This isn't an actual question written down, but what's your favourite Partridge moment then, Paul?
It's very hard. I mean, I'm a big, big fan of... I mean, the episode where he gets stuck under the cow is...
Oh, yeah.
Is fantastic.
Farming one is
yeah, the farmers. Just the whole spinal column in the bat moment is...
What is it they shout at him when they push the cow off the bridge? Well, they shout something at him, don't
definitely
they?
Definitely call him a wanker.
Yeah. No, that's it. When he's that's sailing by the bank, on the boat, isn't it? And they're like, oi, Partridge, you wanker.
Yeah.
And the whole speech about, is it Willie Thorne or Cliff Thorburn? That's it being an unknown
quantity. Not primarily ex-snooker player.
I have to say, I think some of my favourite ones are the sports commentary ones from the day to day.
They're brilliant.
I rewatched, in fact, I sent it to you on Facebook, didn't I? The horse racing commentary one with all the bizarre names, like two-headed sex beast.
Massive bereavement.
There's the one where he's with the horse rider who's getting changed.
Changed, yeah.
Takes the top off. Just like see him just peering down.
And obviously the Football World Cup commentary is absolutely brilliant.
Football World Cup is brilliant. Yeah. But I mean, if anybody's a Partridge fan and they haven't checked out the radio series of Know Me, Knowing You, go and find those. They are brilliant.
And also, we can thoroughly recommend the Mid-Morning Matters as well, which I think you bought Adam for Christmas last year, didn't
you? Yes, I did.
Yeah, that's really, really good.
That's really good. And if you've never seen Banged Up Abroad, make sure you watch Banged Up Abroad.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Have you read the book yet?
No.
Read his autobiography, because that is brilliant as
well. We need to talk about
Alan. Yeah.
I've listened to an audio book. Have you heard the audio
book? I've not heard the audio.
Because when it's got him narrating...
yeah.
in Partridge's voice, that takes it up a notch.
My favourite thing about the whole book, I think, is the way he always refers to Lynn as my assistant. Like, he doesn't name her once in the book. She comes up loads. And presumably, if you've never seen the show, you wouldn't know who he's talking about. But yeah, never refers to her by name.
Well, I heard an interview with him a while ago. And one of the things that him and Armando Iannucci, apparently, if they used to meet up, one of the things that they'd do is, even if they weren't planning to do anything with Alan Partridge, was just kind of plotting what he might be doing kind of in the mean points, just to give him the kind of the richness of that backstory.
Right, so just imagining what was going on in his life. Yeah.
And one of the things when they came to do the book is they had somebody literally going through everything with Partridge in and literally putting together like a
proper timeline
right. when things were meant to have happened, so it's all kind of, you know, in sync with each other.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, actually. And there's one final question, and it's directed explicitly at you, Paul. Paul, could you reconsider your unreasoned dislike of the model Rick Martel by watching him in his purple trunks 1990 to 1991 era? The sky blue era of 93 is not the place to start, nor is the hot pink of 92.
Okay.
Yes, you're willing to reconsider it?
Well, the thing is, it was not, I think, an unreasoned dislike particularly. It was just that's all I've seen of him.
Right.
So Adam, I think, had memories of Rick Martel from prior.
From like 1990.
So you had some background. Yeah. So you were kind of higher on him than I was, but all I had was that kind of little kind of snapshot of him. And that's kind of what I thought. I perfectly win. So he might be better than I thought, but I just... perhaps I didn't see him at his best.
We'll put something up on Facebook for people to recommend Rick Martel matches or skits or segments.
Or which colour pants looks best in.
Yeah.
I always liked his character, his backstage promos and things. I thought were really quite funny.
Just don't watch the blindfold match from WrestleMania 7 because that's shit.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
Don't.
Okay.
Okay, then. Our challenge to you, the audience, this episode, in honour of the appearance of half of WCW's 1995 roster turning up, was to book a wrestler of your choice in an episode of Baywatch. The following are our favourite suggestions, so I'll go first. This one's from Corey McChrystal. You ready?
Okay.
Vince McMahon takes over management duties at the Baywatch beach. He hires a new staff of tall, chiselled muscle men with no lifeguarding experience because the current staff aren't big enough and he doesn't believe anyone would take their life-saving skills seriously. Whilst the old staff are kept on, it is only to make the new staff look good. They are made to pretend they are failing to save drowning victims so that the new lifeguards can run in, save them both, and be bigger heroes. Furthermore, only the new guys are allowed to run in slow motion. David Hasselhoff, ever a perfectionist, refuses to go along with this, and as he is the most gifted lifeguard Vince has, he is given token runs as head lifeguard whenever Vince's new favourite lifeguards don't pan out, mostly because too many people drown otherwise. Vince also only allows the female lifeguards to save people if it takes less than 5 minutes. Otherwise, they can only accompany the male lifeguards, but aren't allowed to do any lifeguarding. Later, David Hasselhoff refuses to drop his head lifeguard status to one of the new guys. He assures Vince that he will step down, but only after a high-profile rescue. Vince, unwilling to trust David, since Pamela Anderson showed up at a rival beach and unceremoniously binned her red rescuer's buoy, conspires to have someone drown and have David take the blame. Afterwards, when asked if he regrets having Hasselhoff, a formerly good and loyal employee, canned in such a disgraceful manner, he will retort that Hoff screwed Hoff.
Wow.
That is
wow.
brilliant.
That is...
Yeah.
I think Corey McChrystal's done a work of genius before. I'll have to dig back through the other episodes. There was definitely something he did that was brilliant.
Do we need to bother watching the rest of the new Gen Era now?
that's all plot spoilers, yeah. Yeah.
Eric Johnston. CM Punk is an up-and-coming lifeguard in a smaller beach who has just been picked up by the Baywatch crew. Through a series of 90s-style vignettes, you see him transform to a reliable and talented lifeguard. However, there is something not quite right. Punk likes to tell it how it is and isn't too nice to the beachgoers that have grown to like him. Slowly, Punk starts to dislike the lifeguarding career he once loved. Along the way, we start to see the little things that wear him down. Another new lifeguard nearly drowns Punk in a friendly swimming competition, and the management seems to want to keep Punk working after straining his arms. The straw that finally breaks the camel's back is when Mitch Buchanan comes back from retirement to be the head lifeguard, and enraged Punk takes his beach ball and leaves Baywatch.
Yeah, that's really good.
You two haven't listened to the CM Punk podcasts, have you?
No.
You really should. They are fascinating listening.
Because, I mean, you recommend it to me, but literally... interesting fact for all our listeners, my iPod broke this week.
Yeah.
The kind of on-off button got stuck down. The only way I can listen to it is if it's plugged in, which kind of takes the point away from having it as an iPod. So, no, I haven't been able to listen yet.
No, I thoroughly recommend it. I'm sure most people listening will have listened to it.
Is there just the one?
There's two. The first one is the Meteor one. The second one's got a few little gems in there. But the first one has got the real sort of backstage.
So they're both Colt Cabanas.
They're both Colt Cabanas.
Part one and two type thing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Definitely recommend listening at some point. And watching Vince's one with Stone Cold as well, which it was on the network.
Yeah, I imagine watching them back to back would be quite interesting, I suppose. Because do you think the Vince one is a direct response to the fact that Punk's gone out and said
one was announced on the Monday of Raw and the Punk one was dropped without any prior warning. They just put it out without saying, right, Punk's going to be on it next week. So, but obviously he addresses Punk on the Stone Cold one and then Punk readdresses what Vince said about him on the second Cabana one.
So it's just becoming a bit of a set to over podcast.
So what, I think it's done.
Tell us some of the meeks. Although I've heard that he's done them and that they're a good listen, I've not really read any details about what's said on them.
So the bulk of it, the main qualms he's got are losing to part-timers a la Taker, Rock, Lesnar. Just being overworked, basically, being taken back on the road after injury, like immediately when he's finished surgery. Apparently he had a staph infection on his back for the better part of like 6 months or something that could have killed him and wasn't addressed correctly. And just creative frustration and stuff as well. And fair play to him in that he decided he didn't like it anymore and he just kind of walked out. Yeah. And then Vince has gone on, the other main qualm he had was that they sent him his termination papers on his wedding day, which was apparently like 2 days after Triple H had texted him and he was willing to talk at that point, but said to him, look, I'm getting married and then I'm going on my honeymoon and then we'll talk after that. And then 2 days later, he gets this package with his like termination papers, at which point obviously now he's completely unwilling to deal with them again. So Vince goes on Stone Cold's thing, apologises to Punk, and then Punk on Cabana says, well, surely if he wanted to apologise, he would have done that personally months ago, kind of thing.
But interesting.
It's just come out overnight that he's signed to fight for UFC next year.
Wow.
How would Punk get on in UFC, do you think?
I know nothing about UFC, so I wouldn't like to offer an opinion. I would imagine they're not going to give him like the top guys right away because they probably realise they're smart enough. Right, if we just give him some guys to make him look good. Because they'll draw big numbers, because it'll draw wrestling fans that want to watch what CM Punk's doing.
Yeah, it will do. I mean, not what happened to Lesnar, really.
Well, yeah, exactly. So,
do you think there's an element of perhaps, you know, Lesnar's done it and it's helped him in his career?
Well, yeah, that's the theory. He's going to go be a big star in UFC and then demand a Lesnar pay raise.
That's
a good idea.
That's kind of just how I saw it in my head, just because I think he's the sort of person that likes to make a point.
Yes, I think there would be an element of, fuck you, I'm going to go and draw big money for UFC just to show you what you had. Mm. I get that he really likes UFC and MMA, but I think there's definitely that element to it as well.
Yeah. And you can kind of see his point, really, that he was always working, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he got himself over, he was super popular, selling loads of merch, selling loads of tickets, but then never got that really top spot and was always having to lie down for people who didn't put in the same amount of work.
I mean, you've got the argument that someone like The Undertaker and someone like The Rock has earned that status. Like, Undertaker worked full-time for years and years and years.
Undertaker I would put on a slightly different line to the Rock, because the Rock vanished for a bit and then came back, and Undertaker was always kind of a constant there. So although he was kind of part-time, he was still a constant.
I'd put Rock and Lesnar in the same bracket, but they've earned their right to pop back as and when they feel like it. Do I agree he should have been losing to them all the time? No, and his point stands that I think he mentions when Vince rings him up and says, right, we want you to lose to Lesnar at SummerSlam, Punk's immediate response is, oh, great, and he'll be at work on Monday. And Vince is like, well, you will.
Yeah.
It's a whole other subject that I'm sure many podcasts have covered to death.
Very, very debatable, I guess.
But yes, that analysis of the situation with the Baywatch comparison was very amusing.
Dan Davis says, a Bikini Beach blast-off episode starring Sunny, Sable, Marlena and other mid-carders from 1995. Mitch and Todd Pettingill host the Bikini Beach blast-off with the aforementioned women competing to see who will win the Bikini Beach blast-off. Jerry the King Lawler is lying on a lilo, being all smug and all that. Suddenly he tumbles over the lilo and starts to drown as he can't swim. Pamela Anderson rushes to Lawler's rescue and they swim to shore. Anderson does mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, but it was a Lawler plan all along and he's a wild pervert and starts to get aroused. The mid-carders are disgusted and start kicking sand on Lawler. Sonny wins the Bikini Beach Blast-Off. Very nice.
Yeah. Right, I'm actually going to tell you, approximately 80% of that actually happens.
What?
That's all I'm saying. And, really? And you will get to watch it.
Really?
Yeah.
I cannot wait.
Just take out the bits with David Hasselhoff and Pamela Anderson, and you've basically got the SummerSlam 96 pre-show.
Bloody hell.
I thought you'd find that amusing. Yeah. Okay, Adam King says, Umaga, Viscera and Bam Bam Bigelow are installed as the new Beach Patrol team to help cover their debt repayments for a failed group investment. Big Daddy V is forced to quit as he keeps getting pushed back into the ocean and a love affair involving Pam Pam Bigelow.
Oh, genius. Very good, yeah.
That leads to the Hoff receiving a Samoan spike. All three eventually fake their deaths to cash in on a life insurance and clear the debt.
Russ Morgan. A mysterious creature has been attacking surfers at Baywatch. Mitch calls in his old friend Skinner, the alligator man, to help. The reason for concern is the big surf competition called Bash at the Beach is about to take place. Surfer Steve Sting Borden is the white-hot favourite and must be protected at all costs. Skinner has set various traps trying to capture the creature, but as the day of the competition looms, he hasn't managed to catch the monster. Sting reaches the final as expected. His friend, Randy Savage, is by his side, but their foes, Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, are there to spoil the party. Sting begins his final run. During an amazing manoeuvre, excellent, the creature strikes. It's Shark Boy, in capitals. A run-in by Skinner subdues Shark Boy enough to tie him up and swim for shore. Sting wins by DQ. However, an old ally, Hulk Hogan, joins Hall and Nash, thus creating the Nevada Waterfront Observation, NWO, in direct competition to Baywatch, a hollow victory. Everyone celebrates at the Malibu Sands Beach Club. Zach kisses Stacy under the fireworks. Skinner gets to... Who's Zach and Stacy? Skinner gets to go home, eat Shark Boy with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Sting gets his title, proceeds to bang CJ Parker while Skyping Sonny, and Mitch eventually sells Baywatch to Vince McMahon, who kills it dead with an invasion angle.
That's very, very good. Yeah.
You don't know who Zach and Stacy are?
Not a clue.
Saved by the Bell. It's the summer ones where they go to the Malibu beach sands and he falls in love with that other girl that's not Kelly Kapowski.
No, you can't. You can't cheat on Kelly.
She was my first favourite girl when I was
I think of our generation, probably everybody's first favourite girl.
Yeah, very possibly. But yeah, that was also genius.
Matt Gallagher says, Sonny joins the cast. The plot is her and Pam Anderson are sluts. I like it. I like it. It's straight and to the point.
Is that it?
That is it.
Okay, my last one is from Andrew Scythe, and it's not so much a plot as a poem that I will read to you. It goes, some people stand in the dungeon, afraid to step into the light.
Ooh, brilliant.
Some people seek the rare white Bengal tiger. The end of Hulkamania's in sight.
Lovely.
Yeah. Someone should write that whole song. Andrew Scythe, rewrite that whole song.
Yeah, really good.
Mm. Paul will sing it.
Austin Beattie. The IRS goes to find David Hasselhoff's character as he's heard he was big in Germany and may not be paying royalties for all the merchandising he's selling over there. Or Randy Orton goes to Baywatch and tries to bang Pamela Anderson. But since she's not interested, he decides to leave her a massive present in her bag.
And my last one comes from Brandon Stewart, and it goes, the Repo Man stole Pamela Anderson's implants. And it's up to the unlikely team of the cast of Baywatch and Aldo Montoya to save the day. But the Repo Man has hired Waylon Mercy and Bray Wyatt to stop the team from retrieving the silicon from the Repo Man. After a few Benny Hill chase scenes with guest appearances by Shark Boy and Earthquake, the group retrieved the implants thanks to Bertha Faye taking Repo Man away to a nearby shack. Okay. After saving the implants, the Baywatch gang, Aldo, Hornswoggle, the three midget doinks, the three midget kings and El Torito celebrate on the beach at night in a Return of the Jedi-style celebration. Weird, but excellent.
I thought you'd like the Return of the Jedi part of that one.
I did. I also like just the ensemble of Aldo, Montoya, Hornswoggle and loads of midgets.
is. But I think in the context of Baywatch, Aldo Montoya works.
Yeah, yeah. He looks a bit like a lifeguard with a silly thing on his head.
And he is the Portuguese man of war, yeah. Which could be a problem.
He would be the baddie.
Yes, I suppose he would.
He'd be the big evil.
Anyway, thank you for all your suggestions. Yeah, really good. As ever, brilliant. So, Adam, tell us about Baywatch.
Okay. I'm going to do a fairly brief rundown of Baywatch, I think, by all respects of what your normal quality of things would be.
Yeah, I don't expect the entire 1 to 6 seasons worth of plot.
Exactly. So we're specifically looking at the Bash at the Beach episode.
We are.
Baywatch ran from 89 to 99. I didn't realise...
That late?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was cancelled after the first season.
Really?
So it didn't actually run in, like, 1990 or something. It was created by... See if you recognise any of these names. Michael Burke.
Wasn't he a newsreader?
Yeah, he's just been in I'm a Celebrity.
Not that Michael Burke.
Oh, but I do recognise his name, because his name is on the created list for Thunder in Paradise.
Douglas Schwartz.
I'm presuming he was the other created name.
Is the other creator of Thunder in Paradise, and a Gregory J. Bonin.
But it wasn't the newsreader, Michael Burke.
It was not the newsreader, Michael Burke. As far as I'm aware, I mean, I've never seen him. But anyway, so it was cancelled, but Burke, Schwartz and Bonin thought there was still life in the idea, and as did a certain leading man, David Hasselhoff. Yeah.
So was he in the first season? Obviously?
Yes, he was. And it was revived in 91 for a rather successful run until 99. There was also Baywatch Hawaii from 99 to 2001. It ran for like 2 series. I've never seen any of it.
Well, when I followed the link that you sent me to watch this episode, I did notice that all of the kind of other episodes that appeared were kind of Baywatch Hawaii, which from the stills that I saw looked to probably be exactly the same thing, but with yellow swimsuits.
and a very different cast, I think.
Was Hasselhoff in it?
I'm not entirely sure.
You didn't click on that link.
I've no interest in Baywatch Hawaii.
Okay. Mm.
It falls out of the 90s. So I did actually print off, as you've seen, a massive list of the people that have appeared in Baywatch. I thought I'd ask you about anyone that you particularly fondly remembered from Baywatch, if you ever watched it when you were younger.
I did watch it when I was young. It was on sort of either before or after Gladiators on a Saturday tea time.
That's ITV.
My memories of Baywatch.
I didn't really watch it, no.
And my main memories are Pam and Yasmin Bleeth. I'm aware other people were in it.
Well, I think everyone knows David Hasselhoff, and he's become a celebrity in his own right. I'm not sure if any of the other male cast members are known, but I would put a mention in for this Michael Newman.
He was the other old, like, bold, moustached lifeguard, wasn't
he? Because it says he was in it from 96 to 99, but then he was recurring previously, so I think he'd always been in it. And he's the only one that actually looked like a lifeguard, whilst everyone else looks like a model.
He didn't have big fake tits, is what you're saying.
Well, neither did Hasselhoff, but he didn't really look like a lifeguard.
He was a big fake tit.
Well, possibly. I've not really got many opinions on David Hasselhoff.
Okay.
I don't dislike him or like him in any way. He's just there. Right. He's just that Baywatch guy. You never watched it, Paul?
No, it's the sort of thing which I will have seen. It's the sort of thing that, because it was on so much, I will have flicked through it. And I actually think I may have seen little clips of this before. Obviously, kind of being, I guess at the time it would probably come out, partly interested in wrestling, partly have seen some, but not really a fan at the time. It's probably something that I'll have seen. Mm. Seen probably something like Hulk Hogan as a familiar face. Watched a little bit of, and as probably as soon as he disappeared, I probably would have switched off or turned over.
But I mean, it was so massive that I guess it saturated into popular culture. So if you didn't watch the show, you still knew what it was about.
Oh, yeah.
Still knew the people from it. I had particular memories, obviously, of Pam Ranson and Yasmin Bleeth, like yourself. Also, Erica Eleniak from the first couple of series.
A couple of people mentioned her on Facebook. I don't really remember her, but she's the one in Under Siege, isn't she?
She jumps out of that cake.
Yeah.
And
the way that you just said that jumps out of that cake.
It was pretty amazing.
I've not seen that, but is it something?
Watch it. Under Siege is a very mediocre Steven Seagal film, but that cake scene is brilliant.
Is it the cake that's of interest? Or
yes, it's the cake.
Okay. She's cooked inside it.
That'd be horrible. Also, Nicole Eggert.
I remember the name, but not really remember her.
Tracy Bingham.
Yes, I remember her,
Tracy Bingham was very nice. And obviously Carmen Electra appeared in the later ones.
But she's not even got any credentials as an actress at all, has
no,
she?
Like,
she's not an actress.
She was just there to look good.
Well, we'll talk about the acting.
So yeah, it had a massive cast list, and everyone seems to, you know, come and go. No one stays around for much more than about 3 or 4 years, really, apart from Hasselhoff and this Michael Newman. I guess in the best period of time to be watching it probably is in the 95 to 97, where you've got all of the biggest stars
right.
that appear in it. Before that, it's still building up, and I think after about 97, it must tail off somewhere, because you have...
When does Pam leave?
Pam leaves in 97.
Yasmin?
Yasmin Bleeth leaves in 97, but it says she recurs after, so I guess she
goes to WCW.
Yeah, that's where they go.
They'll go to Thunder in Paradise.
Okay.
Alexandra Paul leaves in 97.
Okay.
One thing that you need to mention for Baywatch, I guess, is the theme.
Yeah.
It was written by a group of people, including the performer, Jimmy Jameson, who was from Survivor.
Wow.
So I guess that explains
the tone of it.
Yeah, it really explains its mulleted vibe Survivor. That's coming out. I really
like
it.
The Tiger.
Yeah, I was just thinking that, yeah.
Have they ever had
that for Survivor Series?
No, but Hogan used it as his original entrance theme before
Okay.
A Real American.
It's probably a very, very good entrance theme, I think.
Yeah.
And an instrumental version of it was used for the outro. And apparently a different instrumental version was used for the theme of the first season of Baywatch Hawaii.
Right.
But as I've said, I've never seen that and don't really intend to. At its height, it aired in 148 countries.
Wow.
On every continent apart from Antarctica.
Well, they can't really relate to it there, can they?
Yeah.
There's
probably one guy in a shack with a telly watching.
Have these ice guards. Oh, no, somebody slipped on the ice.
But, I mean,
we'll send the girl in the bikini.
She's dead.
Baywatch Antarctica.
That is just an incredible feat. And I swear I remember reading that it had an estimated 1 billion viewers globally.
Jesus.
At one point. I think as we see from this episode, you don't really need to understand what the hell is going on in this.
It's all the audience, just all the
teenage boys in the world, yeah.
I can't say for sure, but that's a fair assumption.
Not just teenage boys. I'd imagine any male aged 12 or over.
But I'd love to...
Dads.
The male-female like demographic.
But there clearly would have been the family where the dad is saying, oh, Baywatch, we'll watch that. You like that. It's got romance in it. But really, it's a way for him to watch some good material while the wife's there.
You know, we put a couple of things up on Facebook.
Yeah.
I mean, our demographic is shifted largely in the male.
I would assume.
Did we have any responses from women?
Not on their favourite Baywatch stars, I don't think.
Because that would be interesting to see what women think of Baywatch.
Ask Mrs. Scrivens.
Okay.
Yeah.
She'd probably say the same about wrestling. I like it when there's thumbtacks involved.
Was there a thumbtacks episode of Baywatch?
Yeah, we'll see.
Mitch gets thrown off a lifeguard.
Well, maybe somebody's dinghy could get punctured by a thumbtack.
Yeah, it probably would.
I'm right in thinking girls watched Baywatch as well.
I don't know. I don't recall specifically discussing it with girls when I was a child. I think it was mostly male discussion.
Yeah, I suppose so. Okay, the Baywatch Bash at the Beach was first aired on February the 19th in 1996.
Yep.
And just to give you a flavour of what's been happening on Baywatch, I'll give you a quick synopsis of the previous episode aired on February the 12th.
Okay.
Just to give you an idea of how truly odd I think Baywatch was. It's called Baywatch Angels. Okay. And the synopsis goes, Jack Ripley, a schizophrenic mental patient, escapes from an insane asylum to wreak revenge on the Baywatch lifeguards, particularly Logan and Stephanie, for sending him there by setting tripwire bombs wherever they go. From then on, the show becomes Caroline's fantasy of Charlie's Angels, with Stephanie, CJ and Caroline playing Sabrina, Jill and Kelly characters who attempt to track down the psycho before he can strike again.
Why don't we watch that episode?
I mean, granted, I just pulled this off IMDb, and I hope it's true. It could be someone's deluded fantasy, but it sounds odd, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That sounds like one of our listener suggestions.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay.
It's really good.
So, Bash at the Beach. The intro for this, I notice, is extraordinarily long. It's about 2 minutes.
Mm. Yeah.
And I guess the song is amazing, so you want to keep that on there, and you want to get all the quite extensive cast in there. So we have lots of slow-motion shots of attractive women, chiseled men, David Hasselhoff. The rest of the shots kind of make it clear that the women are there for the visual focus of this show. So you've got your lifeguards, and the male ones, who are sort of like really ripped and getting out of swimming pools and stuff. But all the other shots just appear to be of women in bikinis.
Did you spot that shot of David Chakachi's penis as he pulls out the swimming pool?
Yes.
He was wearing Alex Wright pants.
Strangely enough, I did not.
No. Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely there. Oh, I also thought Hoff and Pam were the main eventers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It certainly looked that way.
And Hobie had the best childhood ever.
Yeah.
Can I just say at this point, before we get into kind of analysing the episodes, that we're going to probably come at this from very different points of view. Because you two are both very knowledgeable in film and TV and production and kind of storytelling in that sense. You're kind of quite skilled at that. And in this sense, I'm going to refer to that as the burden of insight. It very much reminds me of that episode of Scrubs where Dr. Cox's child's on and he's starting to get preoccupied with what could be wrong.
Oh, because too much.
Because you know too much. And I've recently started listening to the Buffy podcast.
That I recommended to you.
That you recommended. And unfortunately...
Dusted, it's called, if for anyone who wants to listen.
It's a good listen. I've only heard the first few before my iPod broke. But I think, to some extent, my experience of the episodes that I've heard them talk about differ quite widely because they're kind of taking things apart and being very analytical about it. And they're kind of picking out holes that I, as just a casual viewer who knows nothing about it, doesn't pick up on at all.
Yeah.
And it means that I think some things that I can enjoy on a different level because I don't know enough.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And I think that might be an important point with how we're going to talk about these episodes.
Okay.
There is an argument, I think, of studying film as we both did.
Yeah.
And opening your eyes to how things are made and the point of them kind of alters your experience of how you
view things.
How you view things. Whether it's a better or worse experience, I can't really say.
No, neither of the experiences is more valid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's definitely slightly different.
Yeah.
I think when things are skillfully done, you'd have much more of an appreciation for the level of complexity than I would.
Quite possibly.
But that doesn't mean your enjoyment of it is less valid.
Yes,
or,
but it's just very different perspectives.
It stops you a little bit getting lost in the narrative.
Yeah, because you're too busy focusing on how it's being done.
Yeah. And there is something wholly pleasurable about just distancing yourself from that and just experiencing some media in that way. Yeah, there's a few shots of boats and helicopters just spooned into the intro to let us know that it's not really just a beauty contest. Some action might happen at some point. So we have an opening shot of some goons on jet skis.
That's Macho Man and Hogan.
It really is. They're having a racing contest.
Terry Hulk Hogan.
I also like that Kevin Sullivan is credited as the Taskmaster. Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah, the credits come up as their special guests, and they all have their wrestling names on there.
And this is in kayfabe, right?
Yeah.
Which is just an odd thing for how wrestling segues into the...
Yeah, my note says guys on the credits are living their gimmicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Vader's just Big Van Vader.
That's his real name, mate.
Yeah.
first name, Big.
And like the thing is, like, Thunder in Paradise is slightly different, but when, what's his name? Jimmy Hart's in it. He's, as his character, very much more so, I think.
Yes, but I think Jimmy Hart's his real name.
No, but just kind of in the, like,
dress
sense.
Oh, in his dress sense. Yeah, we spotted that at the wedding. Mm. We'll get to that.
Yeah. So the two mouth off at each other, but Hogan just stops to lech at some girl on a jet ski.
Just kind of circles her a few times, a little bit sharkish.
Macho is more focused.
Macho has the better focus. This girl says, "Hey, Hulkster, you're looking good." So she's clearly a wrestling fan. She can tell it's Hulk Hogan. Mm. And in response, you know, Hogan just kind of makes pervy noises.
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything, just goes, as he goes around her. And I thought, that's a little bit odd.
But I was struggling at this stage to work out, are they being genuinely competitive and rivals, or are they kind of buddy competitive? I didn't think it was clear at that point.
I think it becomes clear.
It does.
So Hogan, anyway, transfers his thoughts back from his cock up to his head and decides that he's going to try and win this match. He says, "See ya, gotta catch Macho," he says to this girl. The only words that he says to this girl.
Apart from grunting.
Yeah, what a charmer. Yasmin Bleeth is watching all this.
She looks concerned.
She does look concerned. There's some idiots on jet skis.
It's like she knows that something's going to go wrong, like in every episode. Not that I watch every episode, but you just know that's kind of how it works.
You read down some of the stuff from Baywatch. I swear they have like a nuclear threat on one episode.
I'm sure that happens at every beach.
I definitely remember seeing one when I was a kid where there was a load of, you know, like sea mines, the ones that look like big urchins.
Yeah.
And there was an unexploded one of those that happened to float towards an oil rig that they were all on and blew it off.
I swear that's an episode of Dad's Army as well. Anyway, I mean, the bit that I didn't necessarily see coming is that Terry comes, or Hulk Hogan, comes off his jet ski in a really big bump. And that was obviously a concern. What was more concerning is how, despite the trajectories, that the jet ski landed on him. Because I mean, because I put a note on...
Well, doesn't
on,
he fall off the back of it?
Yes. I mean, I put a note on here that says, the jet ski looked like it took a y equals minus the tenth of x squared minus x plus 5 trajectory, whereas Hulk Hogan looked like he took a y equals minus x squared plus 9.5 trajectory if you're starting at roughly x equals 3 and looking towards the left. I think kind of appeared on the shot. And obviously, I don't need to tell our listeners any more about those particular parabolas. He'll obviously have a clear mental image now, but in no way, shape or form would they collide.
Well, you're not the only one that's surprised at this, because Yasmin is quite surprised and runs to help.
My note says, Hogan goes careering off his jet ski, it hits him on the head and he dies. The end.
But because he is face down in the water for some time. well, but also, it appears to be a female-only lifeguard beach.
Well,
at this point,
we're going to get to this.
Okay.
So Pamela Anderson is also watching, and we get a point of view shot through the binoculars, seeing what she can see.
Yeah.
Which is Hulk Hogan face down in the water, about half a mile out to sea.
Yeah.
By my
But they can wade out really quickly.
I'm fairly sure he's dead.
Oh, yeah. Sure,
by the time they would have reached him.
How much does a jet ski weigh?
What? Really, they're really heavy.
Yeah. Like 800 pounds. I think they mention it at some point in the episode.
Well, that's like Andre the Giant weighs 800 pounds.
By the by, he's knocked out and he's face down in the sea
for
probably about 10 minutes. Yeah, okay. He's definitely dead. The lovely Julie.
Who's Julie?
She's from Unit 5. She's called for backup. See, I don't remember lovely Julie, but on closer inspection, she appears to be Nariah Davis.
Yes, I Googled her as well.
Yeah.
she was Playboy's Playmate of the Month in March 1994.
And if you've not seen her centrefold spread, I would advise looking at it. Really top drawer.
But this is her only episode of Baywatch, it said. And I looked up the rest of her film credits. You ready? Uncredited in Last Action Hero.
Oh, nice.
She's also in The Bikini Car Wash Company.
What? That's a film.
Meatballs 4.
Meatballs 4?
Whipped.
Whipped?
And Citizen Toxie, The Toxic Avenger 4.
She has had a brilliant film
and
career.
Also, she apparently graduated from Bret Hart High School. There's a tenuous wrestling link for you.
Same spelling.
It's got an E on the end of Hart.
Yeah. I don't know about this, because maybe this is something that's apparent in the show if you've watched more of it. But when Pamela Anderson's really concerned and she gets up, she just takes the phone off the hook. Why does she do that?
I don't know. I noticed that as well.
Does she not want anybody to call through?
Does she not have an answering machine?
I don't know. Maybe it's just a...
Can she not put up? Would she get really annoyed if she went halfway out, say, Hulk Hogan, and the phone started ringing? And she just like, I've got to come back in. Is she OCD about it?
It must be some kind of procedure. Because, yeah, I noticed that she did that.
Maybe that kind of triggers some kind of alarm, or I don't know.
Maybe when someone rings her and it's off the hook, they think that someone's in trouble, so they go to investigate. I don't know.
Oh, my God, it's Hulk Hogan.
What do you know? I did get to heaven.
You're right.
I'm in heaven?
No, you're Hulk Hogan.
This keeps getting better all the time.
You're very lucky. You were hit by a ski and you could have been killed.
Darling, I've been hit a lot harder than that in the ring.
That's Macho Man. Randy Savage. What, you guys wrestling fans? Closet. Me too.
Ooh, yeah. This is unbelievable. I like these odds. Uh-huh. Hey, Hulkster, what's the deal, brother? Talk to me. It's not like you to leave me hanging and just checking out the babes and just leaving me out there.
We need to have a little talk, brother, about who cut out on who.
All right, let's do it right now.
Come on.
All right.
Hey, maybe they're gonna fight.
Put your eyes back in the
head. Right, I will.
Pam and Yasmin reach Hulk Hogan and drag him back to shore.
Well, it did notice, even during this dragging to the shore, he wasn't selling. Do you notice that?
It's shocking, isn't it? Macho clearly doesn't give a shit about any of the accident, and he's still just happily trying to win the race, shouting, oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. Now, he wins the race and then looks around like, where is Hogan? But there are only female lifeguards on duty. And
about eight of them.
And Judy runs to the watch. There sure are a lot of buxom girls in tight clothes running in this show. It's all the time.
Because it gets to the stage where they start doing CPR.
Well, there's three more unknown sort of like model lifeguards. So there's six of them.
There are lots of really hot women just standing around. But when they start doing the CPR, The lifeguard doing the chest compression, she's bending her elbows, and that's not a good technique.
It's not. Yeah.
And also, I believe that, I don't know if anybody else knows this, but hasn't the advice changed about the ratio of breaths to chest compressions? Because I think it's 30 chest compressions to 2 breaths now.
They're doing it all wrong.
Is that right? Because it looks weird, you know, kind of watching it in modern day, and because I think it changed. Was it 5? Did it used to be 5-1?
Don't know.
I don't know.
I like the fact that they're not sure whether it's Hulk Hogan until he speaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
It's fairly obvious.
And why do magic sounds play when they think it's Hogan?
Yeah, you get the magical fairy tale music. As Hogan wakes up, they say, "Oh my God, it's Hulk Hogan."
And he thinks he's in heaven.
May very, very well be.
And all the girls are sort of like giggling around him. Is Hulk Hogan a sex symbol?
Yes.
Okay, I just need that clarified for me.
I also like that Hogan said he's been hit harder in the ring than by that jet ski. Really?
Did Yokozuna ever sit on him?
Well, yeah, but...
I also like, was it Pamela that said, when she notices Randy Savage, she just says Randy Savage with genuine adoration.
Yeah, which is...
It may be the finest bit of acting in the show.
It's more emotion than we saw her at, you know, WrestleMania.
Royal Rumble, yeah. I like it that they're all closet wrestling fans as well, it turns out. And then Macho turns up, and Macho's fucking brilliant, because he's like, hey, what's going on here?
Well, his first words is, it wasn't an ooh yet, it's like, ooh, yeah.
Well, he's all pissy at Hogan, isn't he, for copping off with all these babes that he sees.
Yeah. Well, he's receiving genuine life-saving resuscitation.
And they speculate that they might fight.
Mm. But Macho likes the odds, though. well, I've also got to say, I'll put a note in here. Is the wrestlers acting so bad that it makes the regular cast look good, or am I misunderestimating the cast's acting ability?
It's definitely the former. I've noticed this.
Subsequent note is, okay, I've watched the next 3 minutes and I have my answer.
We cut to Stephanie, or the one lifeguard without big tits, who's making a picnic. And the Hoff comes to talk to her about his buddy Tom, who she's seeing. And he does it. Does anyone else feel there's a little bit of creepiness about the way that he interacts with Stephanie?
I didn't realise for some time that
he's the ex. Yeah.
Obviously, I didn't know that, did I?
And it's a bit...
I did think it was odd when there's a later scene where he's just got a picture of her on his mantelpiece.
A black and white one. He's just staring at it, yeah. Stephanie and Tom are on a beach. Romantic music plays as they spout off cheesy dialogue at each other. Tom's hair is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, I'm going to put that out there. I've just put here that, Stuart, can we get a play-by-play of the kissing scene? Can we get this kind of our usual rundown? He starts at the neck.
He works over the ears.
Tom's hair.
You got a bit lost there, didn't you?
I did get a little bit lost, yeah. I think he's got a mullet.
Yeah.
Definitely, on closer inspection.
Because you told me at first it wasn't a mullet.
I didn't think that it was, but on closer inspection I've realised that it is.
I think that it's a more kind of forward-thinking mullet, though.
It is. He's realised it's the 90s, and he's filled it full of product.
Yeah.
So he's sculpted it into a hair sculpture on top of his
head. I've got to say, I did like his hair. It wasn't Drew from Neighbours, but I did like it.
It was a similar styling, though. Yeah. Very similar styling. Anyway, they have this prolonged kiss, and just when it looks like he might put a finger in, Tom kills the mood, stone dead, by talking about Stephanie's cancerous-looking mole on the back of her leg.
And I've written, OMG, I love how this flips between cheesy and cheesily serious. This is genius.
I like that, yeah, his diagnosis of cancer is simply fingering her mole.
What a horrible expression.
Yeah.
How long has this been read around the edges?
He gets angry that she doesn't check the back of her legs, like really angry about it. Yeah. There's no such thing as a safe tan, you know?
There is no such thing as a safe tan. It's all right, none of us have tans.
We are all...
Pale.
Pale.
Not Seamus pale, but...
Or as pale as that girl in Thunder in Paradise, who I thought for a while was Seamus' sister.
Anyone out there today as crazy as me?
Fortunately, no.
Well, I was pretty reckless yesterday. I probably never should have stood up on the ski like that. I'd like to thank you and all your friends again for saving my life.
Well, you were pretty reckless. How's your head?
Well, it's a lot better than the ski. It was totaled when it hit me.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Actually, thanking all of you again isn't the only reason I came to see you. I heard that the Baywatch lifeguards are doing a lot of work at the Venice Boys Youth Center.
You're right, you have.
The place means a lot to me. It's my old stomping ground. If it wasn't for Sonny and the athletic club, I probably would have been wild out on the streets.
Well, I can't imagine that. The life preservers have been volunteering their time to help out Sunny and the kids. But we don't have the money to save the property.
Has it been sold?
I'm afraid so. But we can't figure out who bought it.
I devote a lot of my time to kids. It's my way of giving something back. Maybe I can figure out a way to help you guys out.
Well, that'd be great. A couple of us are headed over there pretty soon.
I don't mind if Macho and myself tag along.
Yeah, I do.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
Pam Ranson is looking great. But then Hulk Hogan wanders up to her and probably ruins her lunch. He's wearing some kind of denim ensemble with a blue bandana and blue cowboy boots.
It was awesome.
It was very, very
silly. They have a bit of a heart-to-heart, don't they?
I'm not saying that everyone seems to know Hulk. He just walks up to people and says, hey, brother, how's it going? He talks to everyone like everyone knows who he is. And
everyone does know who
but,
he is.
No, they
but
must
it, is,
do.
It is kind of the beach where he used to be, so it's feasible that he would know a lot
He'd
of people.
He'd be a like, local celebrity.
Yeah, I think it is feasible.
And then we get some really painful conversation between Pam and Hulk about this venue.
I like how Hulk alleges that the jet ski's fucked because he hits him on the head.
Yes, well, I noticed that. And I put that is the flattest delivery of a joke I've ever heard. Yeah. It really was like, oh, the jet ski was totaled. What, really? No.
I've put that this is a very good scene for Pam because she's not a fantastic actress, but next to Hogan, she looks fucking amazing.
Yeah, I've really put that as well. I actually think that her acting seemed pretty good.
Yeah.
I genuinely thought, certainly compared to the rest of the cast as well.
It's not 5-star, but it was competitive.
Well, it was about 3-star.
Anyway, they get to the point that the Venice Beach Youth Club, or whatever it is being sold to a mystery buyer, but no one knows who it is.
Oh, I wonder who that could be.
Hulk is very angry because this was his old stomping ground.
It was.
Well, whatever that means.
And he just does everything for the kids.
He does do everything for the kids.
I mean, Hulk Hogan, he had a choice.
Yeah, drugs and crime.
Drugs and crime, or to just be healthy and work out. I wonder which one he took.
Bit of both.
Yeah. Kind of what I thought it was, I guess, steroid scandal had hit by now.
Yeah.
So it was a slightly odd one.
But this is probably part of his character rebuilding.
Yeah. I mean, a slight bit of a note for later. This is a very typically American show in that there's lots of morality in here, I think.
Mm. We cut to the boys' club outdoor gym. This is the best outfit that I've ever seen Pamela Anderson wear.
It's interesting, isn't it?
But it's her best look, bar none.
It's a weird thing, because it just comes out over her chest and then just goes straight down, doesn't it? It doesn't go in. It just
It's spot it's on.
Yeah, I noticed it.
Yeah.
Hogan gives them training advice.
Hogan does give them training advice. And they meet Sonny, not the Sonny that I would like to see, but an old guy in a Hawaiian shirt.
Who I thought was actually going to be the villain of the piece and revealed as a Scooby-Doo-esque owner who was haunting his own gym to stop it getting bought.
What, he'd pull his own face off?
Yeah. Or like, no, he'd pretend to be a ghost and at the end they'd pull like the ghost sheet off and he'd be like, my God, it's Sonny, the owner of the gym.
Yeah, he explains to Hogan the gym's been bought out. Hogan's devastated. So is Macho. He says he doesn't know what would have happened to them without it. When he cut back to Mitch Buchanan, he's working out on a treadmill. And another lifeguard is just working out in the corner. I don't think any of these male lifeguards do any lifeguarding.
Just do bodybuilding.
The women are outside saving people and everyone else is bodybuilding. He walks into a unisex changing room, and I'm pretty sure it is a unisex changing room because Stephanie's in there, and she's checking out her mole.
Mm.
And he has a dig at her for being late.
He is the boss.
I did notice, though, this is a unisex changing room, right?
Yeah.
There's a really kind of sexy poster of a woman in a bikini up on the wall.
That's probably someone who works there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably like, you know, when you go into lots of people's works, they've just kind of got the little picture of everybody who works there and what they do.
But does a changing room that's got like Yasmin Bleeth, Pamela Anderson and Gina Lee Nolan in it need a picture of a sexy woman on the wall? Because surely just walking in there, the odds are you're going to see a sexy woman.
If anything, it's bullying towards Stephanie as the only flat-chested lifeguard.
Yeah.
That's harsh.
Yeah,
she says that she's got suspected skin cancer. He reassures her. She thinks she might die. And then it's the first bit of dialogue that really starts to sound like an infomercial for skin cancer.
Yeah, there's a lot of that coming up.
Yeah, I mean, it's my lesser favourite plot narrative of this episode.
Yeah. Go,
go! Who in the heck is that?
Oh, that's the developer that's taken over this athletic center.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, now you're talking. Yeah. Come on, now, guys, brother.
That's the old man they are right now.
Let's go talk to him a little.
Let's see what he's going to say.
Yeah.
So you're the developer. I thought you'd be in a pond hiding under the scum where you'd feel at home.
Oh, Hogan, it's wonderful as always to see you again. And Macho Man,
last time I saw your face, man, it was under my shoe.
What are you doing with your time now that you're a washed-up ex-wrestler, Flair?
You know what they say, brother. Those who can do. Those who can't, don't.
Well, if that's the case, you'll appreciate this. For starters, man, I bought the property. You got it? In a week, it'll all be mine. But today, I'm here because I'm closing the gym down, big boy.
You can't do that.
Oh, little lady, that's where you're wrong. I'm the nature boy. I've got the documents. Soon, this'll all be condos. It'll all be mine. Woo!
Why don't you put your money where your sorry excuse for a mouth is, Flair?
Hey, Hogan, as usual, your words hit harder than your fist, man.
A fight, one-on-one, no holds barred, winner take all. All this property, Flair.
Oh, man, doesn't that sound delightful? What's the collateral, Hogan?
Something that you could never hang on to, Flair. The WCW heavyweight title, brother.
Wait a minute, I call the shots. We're making a team. Me and Vader and Macho Man, I want you right here, right now.
I'd love to tear you apart.
Hey, hell. A team wins both matches or all bets are off.
And whose head am I going to have the pleasure of ripping off, Flair?
No, chump. It's Vader time that's going to rip your head off.
You? I was hoping I'd have to have a match where I had to keep my eyes open, Vader.
Save it for the world to see. Save it for the ring, Hogan.
Come on, let's go. Come on.
Hogan, you did me, brother. Come on, baby. Woo! Woo! Macho, what are you smiling about, buddy? You're next.
Don't be betting on it.
Woo! Now you go.
Saturday, on the beach, and bring escrow papers, Flair.
Come on, Macho Man, I'm gonna fuck you right now.
Hogan, we're gonna find out who the man is. Oh, that basketball thing is gonna look like time. Vader, you're mine.
Woo, turn up, big man. You're dead meat, baby.
Nature boy. Hulk's too good at getting in between those ropes. He's too agile for Vader. You know that.
Cage, Taskmaster.
Once Vader's got him in the cage, he'll never get away.
Hey, man, that chump ain't gonna go for this.
Sure he will. It'll be too late before he finds out. Come on, let's go.
We cut back to the gym. Macho's being cheered from all the kids there for lifting all the weights. A stretch limo turns up. It's the new developer. Hook decides he's going to have words. At the car, exit Kevin Sullivan. Exit Ric Flair. Exit Vader.
I love that Kevin Sullivan's wearing a suit, yeah, but still has his Taskmaster face paint on.
Brilliant. Yeah. And obviously Flair has a suit. Vader hasn't bothered to wear anything other than his ring gear and
they
mask.
Probably don't make a suit in his size.
Mm. I bet they do.
Maybe they should make a smarter version of his mask out of like suit material. When he really wants to be showy.
Oh, that Flair gives a big fuck you to Hogan by being a way better actor than Hogan is.
Yeah.
I mean, way better. Why didn't he ever have a film career?
I don't know, but I want to know why they didn't transfer this gimmick back to WCW. Ric Flair, property developer.
Mm.
Like, yeah, that could have been a gimmick. Yeah.
Oh, look, it's very. This is also very Scooby-Doo evil. He's going to concrete the gym and build a load of condos for no reason. Hogan offers a ridiculous deal that no one would take.
Yes.
How about we have a fight, and then if I win, you give me all this property that you've just bought. No one in their right mind would do that. Flair asks about collateral. Very clever, Flair. Mm. What's in it for me? And when Hogan says it's the WCW title, Flair goes bonkers. He goes absolutely apeshit and says, yeah, fine, but I'm going to fight Macho Man. And you're going to fight Vader.
See, I wasn't clear on this to start off with. To start off with, I thought that they were making a tag team match and that
Teddy Long didn't show up.
Yeah. That's what I thought was going to happen.
I like that Sullivan just cackles evilly in the background while this is just going on.
Yeah, he kind of chips in a little bit at the end, but he's not really doing anything there.
But why does Flair want to not fight for the championship?
I don't know. He just wants to fight Macho Man. That's what's booked on the actual pay-per-view. Shh.
It's a bit lunatic. I do like the fact that Vader just grabs a kid's basketball and squashes it.
Yeah.
That would be quite difficult. Basketballs are hard if they're properly inflated.
I'm not sure whether it was a prop basketball, but I'd like to think that it wasn't, and Vader's just that hard.
It's all right, though, because Flair has a master plan.
Sullivan tells Flair that Hogan is too agile for Vader. Yeah. Like,
really?
Fucking hell.
I'm not sure that he is.
That old guy with busted knees, he's too agile for Vader.
Vader, who's 400 pounds and can do a moonsault.
Yeah.
But yeah, Flair has his devious plan. And what is it?
It's a cage.
It's a cage, my brother.
It's a cage. And then they all do a villainous laugh and get and get back into their car.
News.
We're back at Mitch's house where he's staring at that photograph of Stephanie on his mantel shelf. Just leaning and staring.
Yeah.
For no reason. It's a bit odd.
Nah, it's fine.
There's a knock at the door and it's Tom. They sit down and have a good chat about Stephanie's skin cancer.
And Tom's hair. What's he using that?
I also like that Mitch tries to make Tom break his Hippocratic oath by just basically being like, we're mates.
Yeah.
Sort it out.
And Tom says that he can't discuss it, but then he just does anyway.
Discusses it, yeah.
He also says the cure rate for skin cancer is 100%.
But then he also adds an
addendum.
And then there's ominous music. Yeah.
And at one point, when he's trying to convince him to talk, he says they both drank from the same milk carton. I'm guessing Stephanie is this milk carton that they both drank from.
Oh, well, I thought it meant a literal milk carton.
All right.
I thought it was kind of like a childhood thing. They shared milk cartons.
Maybe.
So you get healthy bones.
Mitch asks Tom, what do you think her chances are? And Tom doesn't answer. He just looks a bit...
Ominous,
but, yeah.
But Mitch reads a lot into that.
It looks bleak. He's upset. We cut to a leg. A very nice leg.
Being lubed up.
It's Yasmin Bleeth greasing herself up. Steph walks out in a robe. I guess we're in their house. Yasmin mentions that CJ has already left. These three live together. Yeah, Steph bitches about skin cancer to Yasmin, giving us a lot of important information about how sunscreen works.
Well, I thought this was interesting because I've written that Stephanie is now working as a sunscreen salesperson. She is somewhat overly cautious with her mask, but that can be attributed to her impended biopsy results. But she was. I mean, if you notice on the mask, she was overly cautious with it by a couple of hours.
Okay. She tells Yasmin that she might have skin cancer. They have a cry and a hug.
I've got to say, that scene in terms of acting was probably the worst in the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's shocking.
They really struggled to pull off upset.
It's very Melrose Place.
Well, yes.
That type of stuff, yeah. Hogan is at the beach running.
Stalking Pam.
Yes, and calls... Oh, I've got CJ, actually. I've not put Pam for once. Mm. She jogs down the ramp. Now, I hope you both noted the breast movement as she runs. This is key to about half a billion... of that billion viewers.
And I've then put, blimey, a kid is standing on a bendy rock. Did you notice the rock was flexing?
Well, and also a different colour to all the other rocks.
Yes. And floating.
What could possibly go wrong?
Hogan tells her that the match is all set for Saturday. Pam is doubtful that they can win. Vader is psycho, apparently.
Hogan no-sells facing Vader, though. He's like, yeah, it's fine.
He finds it all amusing. Of course he'll win. Has she never seen any of his matches before?
He'll shake his finger.
Yeah, some chump kids are pissing about on some rocks. One of them gets his leg trapped by a moving boulder. Hmm. Pam and Hulk rush to help, running past a mother who's a bit of a bitch to her son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't be silly. What have I told you about making up stories? Not Hulk Hogan.
He wouldn't be here in Venice Beach.
The beach where he grew up, yeah.
As they reach the kids, we can see the boulder is trapping his leg, is strangely floating.
Also, surely they're promoting that pay-per-view as being, like, on that beach on Saturday. So the feasibility that Hulk Hogan is in that vicinity is actually quite high.
Yeah. That mum is a colossal bastard.
But Hulk Hogan manages to lift this rock off the kid's leg really very easily.
Mostly because it's made of polystyrene.
Yeah.
You have skipped over the amazing bird's eye shot that we get right down Pamela Anderson's top as we sort of see from Hulk Hogan's perspective. But yeah, he shifts that plastic boulder. What a hero.
And also, although he didn't sell for the lifeguards earlier, he sells for the rock. And I thought, will he ever sell for the rock again?
Yes, as it happens.
Yes, yeah.
Stephanie has a go at everyone on the beach for not wearing enough sunscreen. This was like a descent into madness, sort of.
It was.
It does. And in the lead up to this shot, we get what I can only describe as a gratuitous shot of two women's arses as it tracks them and then leads up to Stephanie, who's dressed for colder climates because she's scared of the sun now.
I also like that this beach is only populated by, like, super attractive people.
Yeah. And she keeps asking people, like, you know, are you wearing any sunscreen? She must ask about 15 people before she finds a bloke.
This is one of the most painful sequences of television that I've ever seen.
I found this difficult to watch in a couple of ways because it is quite upsetting, but it's quite upsetting how I don't think it's how somebody who had that would go about it.
No, it's quite pushy and aggressive the way that she's doing it.
I think they were trying to perhaps cram a lot of stuff into a very short space of time to kind of tell the story.
Yeah.
And that kind of just made it look very cheesy when it was supposed to be very serious.
Yeah. The idea behind it's quite good, but the execution's very poor.
Yeah.
But it was quite educational.
I guess so.
Lots of kind of, you know, sunscreen, skin cancer facts.
We cut to Yasmin and Steph is moaning about her day, so at least she's very aware of how crazy she's been out on the beach. There's a knock at the door, and a fantastic haircut enters the room. Under it is her boyfriend and dermatologist, Tom. He's wearing some kind of crazy yellow clown tie.
Yes.
And he tells her that she's got melanoma.
It's just an
and they need to do more tests. It's pretty heavy stuff and made mildly lighter by Tom's silly tie. It's ridiculous.
But one of the things is, I forget what term he uses. Tom uses a kind of a medical term. And then just to clarify things to the viewers, they have Yasmin Bleeth ask what it means.
Yes.
And I think that's her only function really in that scene, is to is help clarify the things for the viewers.
It is. I'm wondering that in Tom's life, that this is the tie that he always wears when he gives people really devastating news to try and take the edge off it.
Probably.
It's time for a prolonged montage of Hulk and Macho working out and running around, all to American Made.
Awesome. I also like that Hogan's wearing a Gold's Gym vest, which is presumably a rival gym to the one he's now trying to save.
Yeah, that's fine.
Treacherous bastard.
What an asshole. That goes on for ages. That's like a 2-minute montage of them.
You're
just
need a montage.
Around.
It's longer than that.
You definitely do. It's the whole song, isn't it?
But then they all cut promos.
Steph is out on what looks like a date with David Hasselhoff. They reminisce about old times where she starts to have a go at him that he once promised that everything would be okay.
They also talk about the time she got shot on a cruise ship and dived overboard and he saved her.
I think this really gives you a flavour of what Baywatch is like. Do you remember last year when we went on a cruise?
I love the way they've always got something in the well that they can dig out when they need it with that.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bash at the Beach. We want all of you to come down because we want to help save the Venice Boys Athletic Center. And here to help us save it is Hulk Hogan, the WCW Heavyweight Champion.
Well, you're going up against one of the meanest bone crushers in town. What's your strategy, Hulk?
Well, you know something, brother. What he doesn't understand is that Hulkamania is going to be running wild, dude. And with the largest arms in the world, saving the Venice Boys Club, the WCW Heavyweight title on the line, and a Baywatch babe watching my back, I'm going to break him in half, brother.
So how do you feel about your match today?
Julie, I'm glad you asked me that question. I am the Tower of Power, too sweet to be sour, funky like a monkey, sky is the limit and space is the place. Ooh, yeah!
Hulk Hogan, the Macho Man, and all those little Baywatch lifeguards, the way I figured, Taskmaster, we're getting rid of the red, because yellow is more their color.
Ooh. Macho Man?
Yes!
What's your plan?
Cody, my plan is no plan, yeah. I live on the edge, living on the edge. Ride the edge of a lightning bolt across the sky. Do you know why, Cody?
No, I don't.
Because of the boys' club. Because of Sonny.
You've gone head-to-head, toe-to-toe in the past. Tell the whole world what you're going to do to your opponent. Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh, the Macho Man already knows. Today, he's got a deal. Woo! With the Nature Boy. And right here on this beach. And Nature Boy Ric Flair, you've got to understand that you're in a lot of trouble.
Macho Man, I'm going to hit you like a human torpedo. Then I'm going to style and profile off into the sunset. Woo!
So what you going to do, Vader and Flair, when Hulkamania runs wild on you?
It's time for Bash at the Beach. Hook cuts a promo, then Macho cuts a crazy promo, then Flair and the Taskmaster. Well, basically, they all cut promos, and it's intercut between each other. I do like the way that Kevin Sullivan's now wearing his wrestling gear, at least.
I also like that Macho just cut like a Billy Graham, Dusty Rhodes.
Is that
promo,
what it was?
Like
it was
line for line, yeah.
It's funky like a monkey.
Yeah, all that stuff.
But yeah, he has a second bit where that lifeguard asks him, what's the plan? And he goes, the plan is I have no plan. I'm like a lightning bolt or something. And he's dressed like a giant Slim Jim. Now, I didn't want to go into this match too much, so Stuart, I asked you to do a play-by-play on the matches as we see them.
Well, I'm actually just going to take you through the actual pay-per-view itself. So, all this bollocks was actually filmed around a genuine WCW pay-per-view, the appropriately named Bash at the Beach on July 16th, 1995. We briefly mentioned it on the Halloween Havoc show. This event drew WCW $0 and 0 cents as they held it on a beach. The attendance is disputed. WCW claimed various different figures, and on the actual pay-per-view itself, Tony Schiavone hilariously claims it to be in the hundreds of thousands. The history of WWE.com has it listed as 9,500 actual, announced as 100,000.
It's a bit of an embellishment.
There were logistical problems with holding a wrestling pay-per-view on the beach, one being that the crowd was made up of randomers who really weren't WCW fans, and another being that, bar a small stand for Slim Jim employees, everyone stood on the same level, and thus a good portion of the crowd can't actually see what was going on. The results of the show were as follows. Sting defeated Meng to retain the US title. The Renegade defeated Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff to retain the world television title. This match was comically bad. Renegade got booed to fuck, as did a lot of the babyfaces on the show, and attempted two of the worst dropkicks I've ever seen, and was booed to fuck again when he made his comeback sitting up Undertaker style after an Orndorff piledriver. He then got booed again when he attacked Orndorff post-match. Moving on, Kamala defeated Jim Duggan when the Zodiac attacked Duggan with Kamala's mask.
I bet that was a cracker.
Classic.
Yeah.
DDP pinned Dave Sullivan. Harlem Heat regained their tag team titles over the Nasty Boys and the Blue Bloods. Of note here, Earl Robert Eaton was announced as being from Stoke-on-Trent.
Okay.
Randy Savage defeated Ric Flair in a lifeguard match, a.k.a. a lumberjack match. The lumberjacks were Arn Anderson, Booker T, Brian Knobbs, Bunkhouse Buck, Chris Kanyon, Dave Sullivan, Diamond Dallas Page, Dick Slater, Jim Duggan, Jerry Sags, Johnny B. Badd, Mark Starr, Max Muscle, and Stevie Ray. And in the main event, Hulk Hogan escaped the cage to defeat Vader, retain his world title, and end his feud with Vader without either one of them ever being pinned on pay-per-view.
Excellent.
And in a bizarre moment, as the mostly bored crowd left the event, Flair and Arn Anderson came out, and Flair had a go at Vader, presumably because he got pinned a ton by Hogan in 94 and was angry that Vader got away without doing the job. This all apparently turned Vader face, but it was all a bit confusing and a bit messy. And the show is hands down one of the worst I've ever seen.
Wow.
So Flair comes out, but not to his actual music. And Michael Buffer, if you look, you can see him in the ring, but he's been dubbed over.
Yeah, okay. Mm.
Yeah. Macho comes out. Macho and Flair punch each other with comedy sound effects.
Oh, I love the sound effects. What video game are they from?
Julie is in the crowd watching. Flair goes for the figure four, then just isn't.
Mm.
And it just cuts back to more punching.
The cutting is fantastic in this. Yeah. And it just looks like a fist fight for most of it, this match.
Flair flops to the outside, and Duggan and the Nasty Boys get a bit of a cameo throwing him back in. Mm. Macho goes to the outside as ominous music plays. More punching. Macho goes to the top rope and hits an axe handle, winning the match without any kind of pin.
Mm.
5 stars.
Yeah.
Well, Hogan sees that they're putting up a cage for his match.
Oh, that wasn't part of the deal, brother.
It wasn't part of the plan. CJ's very concerned. Vader comes out with his elephant helmet thingy. And that's awesome.
I've got to ask, does he regularly wear that?
Yeah, well, he did in the early 90s, but it's made a bit of a comeback around now.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing.
That is really amazing. Really cool.
You can get one of the classic figures with Vader and that elephant head.
Yeah. Can you just buy those masks?
You should wear that.
Wear it around the house, yeah.
They announce Hogan as the total package.
Stolen Lex Luger's gimmick.
And Jimmy Hart's with him.
And Dennis Rodman is with him on the pay-per-view, and you can spot him in Baywatch, but he's not really referenced in the episode. Hogan scales the cage to enter. Hogan attacks Vader from behind and shoves him into the cage. 10 punches in the corner with comedy sound effects.
But it was a bit of a heelish start, wasn't it, from Hulk Hogan?
You never watched a Hulk Hogan match.
Yeah, he's an asshole. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just like, at least act like a face for a bit.
Axe handled by Hogan as Sullivan and Flair are nervous backstage. Hogan pulls off Vader's mask and body slams him. This hurts Hogan's back. Vader hits a splash off the second rope and chokes Hogan. Hogan speedily hulks up in a quick montage, batters Vader. Before Vader comes back and batters Hogan in another montage.
Yeah.
Hogan rams Vader into the cage, leg drop, big boot, wrong way round, mate. Body slam, another big boot, and with no clear decision or anything happening,
he's just the winner.
Yeah.
We did it for the kids, Hogan screams.
See, I didn't know that he won by escaping the cage. I thought there was a pin that we didn't see.
No,
because you didn't see him outside the cage until way after.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Hogan's won. And yes, you're right. He says, we did it for the kids. We did it for the youth centre. What you gonna do?
Well, I thought this match was a little disjointed.
A little bit.
Yeah. I think it might have been the heavy cutting.
Hogan then gloats at Ric Flair, right in his face, and Flair just gives him the deeds to the...
Well, they did agree, yeah.
And he's normally so respectable in the way that he does things. And that's that. Enough wrestling.
Did you spot when Macho shows up backstage, he's holding a load of Slim Jims?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He is a Slim Jim advertisement.
No, yeah. In his hand, he's got like about 10 Slim Jims. And they give the property back to the Scooby-Doo owner. And then Hogan's suddenly celebrating on an empty beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the crowd must have left quickly.
Yeah, well, they weren't watching it anyway.
We then cut to our epilogue, where we have ominous music playing as Tom approaches Mitch and Stephanie, who look like a couple.
Tom, like, is supposed to be Hoff's best mate, and he is just always with his missus.
Yeah. You would be suspicious. And you've got, like, a profile picture of it on your mantel shelf.
Yeah.
Tom says that the cancer has spread. She cries and is comforted by the two other people in this weird love triangle. The end. Instrumental version of I'll Be There.
Oh! either.
We're going to save that for the end, remember, to not piss off the people that don't like your singing.
Okay. Cut that bit then.
So what did you reckon?
5 stars.
Certainly competitive.
I enjoyed it. I guess it does what Baywatch is supposed to do. It provides cracking visuals with thinly veiled plots.
I thought the sort of clash of the two
is
plots...
Is that an analogy?
I thought the clash of the two plots was just so jarring, like...
Yeah, wrestling and a genuine cancer scare is... Yeah.
Apparently she doesn't die from the cancer, though. I did look into that. She, like, dies in an explosion.
Well, it's very difficult to die from melanoma, isn't it? As, even in the mid-90s, the technology was up to a certain level where, you know, the treatments were really good for it. And they've tried to paint it as being a lot worse by saying it's spread to different parts. But I guess there's always that get out that it was melanoma and we could get away with it, really. I don't know how much longer it runs for. I'm going to have to try and find season 5...
Season 6
of Baywatch and watch it to see it play out.
I was quite entertained by it.
Yeah.
In
terms of, I thought the biggest letdown for me was I wanted to see a bit more of the wrestling at the end. Not just the wrestling fan, I think as a plot, the way that they've filmed and cut the wrestling at the end doesn't make it make sense.
And I guess that's probably true of the majority of the world. They would have thought that we don't want to have too much wrestling in it because the majority of our audience aren't wrestling fans. But that's no excuse just to cut it together really badly so you don't really know what's happening.
I mean, it must have been actually pretty good promotion for WCW. If 1 billion people were watching this show, then you can understand why they've done it and why they've sent Hogan, Macho and Flair to it. So we're going back in time to episode 1, post-King of the Ring 93. When Hogan left the WWF, he went off to film something called Thunder in Paradise. There's actually precious little information about this show online. But what seems to have happened is that they filmed an original pilot movie that was released on home video on September the 27th, 1993. But it then either was already commissioned or got commissioned into an ongoing series. And the movie was then split into 2 parts and aired as a series premiere on March the 25th, 1994. Upon its premiere, US magazine TV Guide's review described the show as violent, dumb and dull. And of Hogan's acting, they said, his facial expressions are all the same, like he swallowed a bottle of caopisate, which I googled and is apparently diarrhea medicine. However, Wrestling Observer at the time describes the pilot movie's initial rating as tremendous, but does mention that it was given a huge promotional push. Again, initial ratings for the actual show were actually pretty good, and shortly after the show began airing, it was rumoured that the show was up for renewal, and producers were looking at filming 30 more episodes in 1995.
I'm glad they didn't.
I kind of wish I had a torrent of all the episodes, as apparently Terry Funk is a villain in one of them, and I can only imagine that that's amazing. Sting's a villain in another one. Surprisingly, despite rumours of a second series or a series of TV movies, the show only lasted 22 episodes and 1 season before being cancelled. At the time it was circling the drain, Hogan apparently began floating the idea of either rebranding the show or launching a new show starring himself, Sting and Mr. T. Okay.
That would have been quite good.
The version we're watching is from a DVD set released in September 2006, containing this original pilot and 2 other 2-part episodes, one from the middle of the show's run and one from the end, redubbed Thunder in Paradise 2, Thunder in Paradise 3, respectively.
Mm.
Perhaps the show's biggest contribution to pro wrestling was entirely through its filming location, Disney Hollywood Studios, where Eric Bischoff was then taping WCW Saturday Night and encouraged Ric Flair to just go knock on the door and speak to Hogan on the nearby set about the possibility of maybe coming to work for WCW.
So kind of important in a roundabout way.
Yes. So, Thunder in Paradise, the one we're watching is Thunder in Paradise 1, originally released on home video September 27th, 1993.
I actually have a memory of Thunder in Paradise. I remember it being on ITV.
See, I don't at all.
I've definitely seen it before.
Okay.
I don't remember an awful lot about it, and from rewatching this, I can see why I would deliberately blank this from my memory. But yeah, it was on, and it was an ITV thing. It was on like a lunchtime, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
It wasn't like a prime time slot, but I knew Hulk Hogan, so I thought I'd watch it. And we only had 4 channels.
Sexy women lays on a boat while ominous music with 80s vocals soothes its way in.
And this is where you can tell that the same producers from Baywatch are involved, because they know what sells.
And then the drink starts to shake.
Like in Jurassic Park, I thought dinosaurs were going to show up. No, wait, it's a speedboat piloted by Hulk Hogan cosplaying as Nick Fury.
Yeah, why does he have an eye patch? Well, that's what I was wondering at the time.
Well, I put Triple H, not Triple H. Hulk Hogan, I put him as HH, that's why I said that.
He should change his name to Double H.
Double H.
Well, Hollywood Hulk Hogan is Triple H.
Oh, okay, yeah. Triple H is a pirate, that's all I put. And then I put, this might be the stupidest thing ever.
Yes.
Slightly later on.
The boat is called Thunder. They have an 80s theme and it's amazing.
And And this is my biggest annoyance with this show. No way is that downstairs area part of that boat.
No, it's...
Well, the downstairs area is fucking massive.
Hogan and his pal on the boat fist bump, and apparently the boat is a TARDIS.
Yeah.
Because it's just massive inside. Like, massive.
Like, it looks like they're on a submarine.
It's kind of like a house. It could easily be, you know, a decent-sized room in a house.
It's bigger than our living room.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And looking at the boat, it's not bigger than our living room.
No, it's got a microwave.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Out of all the things, I'm glad to see it's got a microwave.
Hogan's pal has bumped some of his coke and blows his nose into the headset.
I noticed that. He was sniffing a little.
It was comedy genius, but he warns him the second time. Yes. It's brilliant. Puerto Manati, Cuba, a.k.a. some sort of floating shack town. Communists with guns. Some woman and her son hide from them. Hogan engages autopilot and joins his pal in the TARDIS. Apparently the boat has some sort of stealth mode.
Yeah, brilliant.
Hogan says he's better with one eye than the other guy is with two.
Yeah. Mm. But I love the way that this floating boat that's got this stealth mode must be the size of, you know, a decent-sized yacht. it's not like a small... If you're thinking speedboat, small, nippy little speedboat, it ain't. It's a big speedboat.
Also, it's got a voice like Michael's car from Knight Rider.
I thought that the voice was like a cross between Ed 209 from RoboCop and Stephen Hawking.
Hogan's pal is smug about stealth working, but Hogan wants guns. He's
and
all about
rocket
guns.
Launches. Yeah. Yeah.
Back to the woman and her kid sneaking around. Quick, stealth malfunction, radar vulnerable.
Oh no.
Hogan's pal wants to turn back, but Hogan says he isn't afraid of angry communists.
It's the one thing we didn't want to happen.
More sneaking by the woman and the kid, and they hide amongst some fruit. On the boat,
it's true.
On the boat, Hogan makes some rice in the microwave.
Oh, that's it in my neck.
The voice of the computer is hilarious, and apparently thunder is amazing. And if anyone points a gun at Hogan anywhere, the ship will target them. What have they designed? Paul's hurt his neck by sleeping funny and apparently laughing really hard hurts him.
That's really painful.
Sleepy communists are shocked when Hogan's massive boat turns up. Hogan's pal is called Brew and Hogan is called Spence, but for the most part I've just referred to him as Hogan. Hogan gets on some sort of jet ski, presumably not the same one that he buried in Baywatch.
Well, we've already seen him on a jet ski today, but this time he looks annoyed when a rocket misses him but does splash him a little bit.
He looks kind of stupid on this jet ski.
Well, the
jet
ski's massive.
Yeah, the jet ski's tiny, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, he looks really silly.
It's like child size.
Also, he's perfectly capable on his jet ski, and I mean, this is typical of any action film. He avoids like about 20 people shooting guns and rocket launchers at him.
Yeah, he's taken on like a Cuban army on a jet ski, and he's still fine.
And he's got no gun either.
And he's not even just like swimming around. He's just... He's just riding in a straight line.
Oh dear.
But then he happens just to ride in front of a boat and they decide to shoot the boat instead. Yeah. He goes off shot and then comes back on and it's all fine.
Hogan spots the woman and the kid, but so do some communists who rush them away. Did the guy with the rocket launcher only have one rocket?
Yeah.
Because, like, that's him. He's done.
Yeah.
Hulk ditches his jet ski and avoids more gunfighter by simply being under the water. Apparently, gunfire cannot penetrate
about,
water.
About 6 inches under the surface of the water.
Well, then he trashes their platform,
he
doesn't
he? He just pushes these massive wooden beams that, by the way, are holding a house up.
Yeah.
He pushes them apart with the power of Hulkamania. There's communists fall in the water.
There's loads of parts of this which is just to sell Hulk Hogan as being like as strong as the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
It is quite ridiculous.
Well, it was their Achilles heel, the beam supporting their house.
Could be moved by one wrestler underwater.
They all run off, like, just as Hogan climbs out the water.
Why do they
roof.
Run off?
I don't know, they think he's dead.
Yeah.
Because obviously if you shoot underwater, yeah, it doesn't stop the bullets from going.
The boat's great, though, because the boat just keeps track of everything.
Yeah. Hogan jumps up onto a roof, and I'm now sort of hoping this turns into Assassin's Creed starring Hulk Hogan as he stalks along the roofs.
I'm hoping it doesn't.
Hogan dives off the roof to beat up some communists and grabs the woman and kid.
He kind of jumps down into this kind of light little jeep.
Yeah.
he bashes two heads together really badly because they don't make any contact, and then just pushes a couple of people out of the way with no
dead.
Resistance whatsoever.
But they then don't come back in any capacity.
So they're knocked out. No one dies in this. I think that's very important.
They kind of run a little bit, trying to evade people, and then they get a bit of a heads up saying, oh, there's some baddies just around the corner. So he picks up like a telegraph pole that just happens to be lying around, and just when they come around the corner, he whacks about six of them with it. But again, this telegraph pole flexes. Don't know if you notice that. When he puts it down, it just wobbles.
And also, it knocks them all clean out so that none of them get up again.
Yeah. Despite the fact that he only hits them in the stomachs as well.
They would have all had to been travelling at exactly the same line, surely.
Yeah, because otherwise they
wouldn't
stop.
One hit wouldn't hit them all. That's very well organised.
Yeah.
Trigger, the jet ski, is named Trigger, heads back to pick Hulk up. Hogan and company dive into the water and then suddenly, without explanation, are on the jet ski.
Yeah, that's fine.
That didn't really make much sense.
No, the jet ski's good.
Brew kills the rest of the communists for good measure. Like, he just keeps shooting them. Hogan, the woman, and the kid make it back to the boat. Thunder's thrusters don't work. Helicopters chase them. Then the thrusters do work. And then we get blatant, and I mean blatant, stock footage of helicopters firing
missiles.
Yeah,
they're like Apache helicopters on there, yeah.
And just the whole tone of the shot is entirely different
and
to anything
else. Not like a ragtag Cuban army, like they've just been fighting.
This is a kind of a long time ago now, that I think it might have, one of the big companies, I don't know if it was BBC or ITV or Sky or whoever, who was showing some war footage. But actually, one of the things that they'd done is, by mistake, they'd actually spliced in some footage from a video game.
Yes, I heard about this.
Into their genuine news footage.
Yeah.
Was it like Battlefield or something?
Yeah, it was something like that. It's not Battlefield, but I think it was one of the PC ones.
Right.
But yeah, there was a massive furore over it, wasn't there? So some old guy arrives at some hotel somewhere that we don't know anything about.
It's Patrick McNee.
From the Avengers.
Yes.
Is it?
It's John Steed from the original Avengers.
I recognise him. I've not seen the Avengers, but I did recognise the guy vaguely.
I like that he gets set up very early on to be the villain, and then he's barely in the rest of it.
Yeah. But do you notice how he doesn't really look like a villain? You know, we've got that shot of him walking through the hotel. He looks like quite a sweet old man.
Adam, of course he's the villain. He's got an English accent.
Yeah, but so is one of the heroes.
Yeah, no, but she's a bit of a bitch.
Yeah, she is.
We cut to loads of scantily clad women frolicking on a beach.
I've put, finally, some tits and arse, because I'm fed up with the opening of this already.
The old guy gets out of a white limo and arrives at the hotel. At a beach bar, some woman ties a cherry stem with her tongue and two guys get off on it.
Why would you do that?
Supposed to be like a sexy thing, but I don't understand
how. No, it doesn't really do it for me.
No. Oh, look, it's Jimmy Hart, and he's with Brutus Beefcake, who is arm wrestling. Yeah. The barmaid is named Kelly. She offers a scoop to some journalist. The old guy apparently is named Edward Whittaker, and he wants the hotel from his niece or something. Her New York accent, now, we've been to New York and Boston.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm getting things confused, but her New York accent sounded more Boston than New York.
And it fluctuates a little bit as well.
Yeah, wherever she's from, it's not either of those places.
Yeah.
And that's not her natural accent.
It's probably a Geordie.
If she'd had a Geordie accent, that would have been amazing.
Well, it's like the English people. When you see an English person in an American film, they never have like a Scouse accent or something.
No, it's
or
just,
really broad Cockney.
It's just a received pronunciation type accent, isn't it? They have, yeah. So yeah, the old guy must be evil because he's English, and then there's another woman who's English, and she must be evil as well. And then there's an old English woman as well. Edward wants the hotel, something to do with his brother's will. He wants to sell it out to some corporation, presumably headed by Ric Flair, who's
And the taskmaster.
Yeah. Knock it down and turn it into condos. Apparently, this English chick needs to be married within 48 hours to keep the hotel from her father's will.
That's standard clause.
Who writes that in a will?
It's like the episode of The Simpsons, isn't it? Where they've got this kind of great aunt or something and they have to spend that night in a haunted house.
Yes.
And they just go, it's like, oh, that's fine. And you just give them all $100.
Mm.
And it's like, oh, did I not say that the rest of the money is left to somebody else? I often carry on talking when people have left the room.
I think the clause is that she's got to be married by a certain date,
isn't it?
And Patrick McNee has waited until this narrow juncture to turn up.
Yeah. But wouldn't she have sorted this sooner?
You would have thought so.
But she was aware of this clause, but she says, because she says,
you said
you'd never enact that clause.
Oh, okay. Hogan is some sort of national hero for bringing this woman and kid back.
Yeah, Cubans love him.
Hogan goes ashore to get all the glory while Brew stays on the boat. Oh, look, Hogan has an adorably irritating, precocious daughter.
Is that actually his kid?
I don't think it is his kid.
Well, there's much confusion with this, because I was speaking to a couple of guys on Twitter last night from Podcast Unknown while I was watching this, and when I watched the second Thunder in Paradise, in that, she's his daughter. So I think in the pilot movie, she's not his daughter, but by the time the series airs, she is his daughter.
She's a remarkably ugly little girl.
And irritating.
You're really harsh. You can't say that about a child.
Well,
he just did.
I just did.
Hogan offers exposition to his daughter about quitting the Navy SEALs to fund Thunder. Oh, and apparently he regularly fights sharks and fillets them.
Yeah. I like the bit where he slaps the little girl in the face.
He fights the shark, but not
It's not John
sharks.
Tenter on this board, though, is it? I like the way he pulls shit out of the shark and then dusts it off and gives it to this little girl.
Would it really have like a whole license plate in its stomach, Adam? You're a bit of an expert on sharks.
No, it's a hammerhead shark. I really don't think so. No. The only ones that would really... The tiger shark will eat pretty much anything that's in the ocean. The hammerheads generally filter along the bottom, you know, digging little fish out of the sand and eating those. I don't think it would be eating cars.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they find a license plate, a shell and a MacGuffin, necklace.
Because that insinuated, actually, that the shark has eaten a car. That's kind of how the script lends itself.
Must have been a small car.
Because, do you say that, but it's like, wouldn't there be other bits of the car in there than not just the number plate?
I think it's more of a famous thing. Reg plates have definitely been pulled out of tiger sharks when they've been caught. I could be wrong, but I'm not aware of any ever falling out of a hammerhead.
Hogan gives the necklace to the irritating girl who calls him Hurricane. So he's got a nickname for Hurricane.
He's the Hurricane.
Uh-oh. I thought Mom'd be inside working.
Don't worry, Jess. You're with me. She knows you're in good hands.
R.J. Spencer, you are the most reckless, irresponsible juvenile delinquent of a man I have ever met in my entire life.
You lead a sheltered life. What can I say?
Jessica, please go and wait for me inside. Where did you get that necklace?
From the Spence. It's brass. It was inside of a shark.
Don't worry. It was dead.
You gave my daughter something you found inside a dead fish?
Mom, he washed it off first.
I'm sorry if you think parasailing is too dangerous for Jess. Next time, I'll ask your permission. See you later, Squirt.
I was hoping you'd be here.
How's it going, Nicole?
Never had a better day, Hurricane. Why don't we go lay this down behind the dunes? And I'll show you how exciting a parachute ride can be.
Meet the way.
Brew takes Hogan parasailing and we get a mulleted solo.
There's lots of mulleted solos in this, I've noticed.
The English chick complains to Kelly and she spots Hogan parasailing. She has a go at Hogan and I think maybe Hogan's already nailed her, but she's the mum and then Hogan is now nailing some blonde chick. And it was all a bit confusing because the Wikipedia said Hogan was the dad and I hadn't watched any of the other episodes. So in the pilot, apparently he's not the dad and she's the mum. Yeah, so I got confused for a good few minutes.
My synopsis of that scene was Mummy isn't pleased, but Hulk's going to get some.
Yeah.
Yeah, he basically hands a child back to this moany English woman and then goes off to bang some skank beyond a sand dune.
Who also has a dodgy accent.
Yes.
Brew prefers talking to the boat than nailing hot blonde women, is my next note. He's all about the technology.
He's a bit of a geek.
Yeah. Hogan looks longingly and topless into the distance. The Navy doesn't want Thunder. Hogan is all upset about it, and Brew hates the government. The bank has foreclosed on Hogan and the repo man is coming to get Thunder on Friday. Hogan has snakeskin boots and Hogan and Brew have a crap fight.
A really crap fight.
Like, watch the They Live fight with Roddy Piper in it, Paul, because that's amazing.
Yeah, that's way better.
This fight
this is
crap.
Mostly them just shouting at each other, isn't it? Making our noises.
I mean, the big climax to this fight scene takes place on this little jetty and the climax to it is Brew runs towards the end looking like he might do something like a spear or something or kick Hogan into the water. But all he does is he dives. Hogan's already moved out of the way about 3 seconds before he starts diving. But then when it's halfway through the air, did you notice Hogan decides to kick him?
I didn't
know. But the way that it's filmed is so bad, you don't really notice that Hogan is supposed to have tripped him up because the camera angle is all wrong and the timing was bad.
Did you spot, and this goes throughout the rest of the episode and seemingly from what I watched the rest of the series, the homoerotic undercurrent between these two?
I thought they were more supposed to be brothers, weren't they?
No. Did you not think Brew's in love with Hogan?
A little bit.
There's definitely that vibe.
Well, he's either in love with Hogan or he's in love with the boat.
I think he loves the boat more.
Well, he's supposed to be in love with Kelly, but I think
he loves her quite a bit as well.
I think it goes Hogan, boat, Kelly in terms of his affections. Anyway, yeah, Hogan goes over when Brew dives into the water. Less of a fall than the giant off a roof, I suppose. Brew wants to get Hogan fired up over losing the boat. The English lady is still upset over losing her hotel and she finally gets a name. She's called Megan.
What is she fucking wearing?
I don't know.
At this point, she looks like she's going hunting.
She is, for a husband.
Mm, yeah.
Well, where's her hounds?
I don't know. Well, she's English, so they just wear hunting
gear.
That's
just what they wear.
The old English lady wants Meghan to get married, and Kelly suggests she marries Hogan. Meghan is appalled, but apparently the little girl loves him, and she thinks he's brilliant. Back to the beach, and Brutus Beefcake is arm wrestling with Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Yeah, I like that.
Anvil wins because his beard overpowers Beefcake's mullet.
And this is the Kowalski that's
given Hogan his Nick Fury eye patch.
Yeah. I like the way that after he wins this arm wrestle, he just wanders into the crowd and screams in a woman's face.
Yeah he also laughs in Jimmy Hart's face quite nicely as well.
It's quite good.
Here comes Hogan to get his win back. Kelly and Meghan look on. Hogan removes his Nick Fury eye patch and goes over. But not before Anvil nuts him, so Hogan knocks him out and Beefcake celebrates with it.
And that's just the end of the arm wrestling match, apparently. That's how you win it.
Yeah.
This eye thing, was there anything about that being a genuine injury to Hogan? Because it looks like he's generally got a dodgy eye, and then they've had to hastily rewrite something into a script.
There was that time, supposedly, Macho Man gave him a black eye backstage at WrestleMania 9, so maybe this wasn't that long after that.
Why did he do that?
It's one of those urban legends that no one's sure whether it's actually true or not, but apparently, they got into some fight around the weekend of WrestleMania 9 and Macho gave him a black eye. So yeah, it could be from that. You never know. Meghan wants to chat with Hulk in private, so they go into the hotel. She knows about Hogan being behind on his bank loan and he's still wearing his snakeskin boots. The Hulkster owes $93,000, brother, which is the same attendance as WrestleMania 3. So he probably only actually owes $70,000, but wants $93,000. Meghan will give him the money if he marries her, and she explains her dilemma with the hotel. Meghan explains the deal with the will and everything, and Hulk is all blasé about it.
Now, did you notice, because she points at the picture of her father, did you notice it was a picture of Harold Bishop from Neighbours? did you see that? Genuinely, it did look like him.
I'll have to have another look at that, because I didn't spot that.
And then Hogan joins the Village People.
Yeah, my next note is just, ha 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 ha. Hogan comes out of the hotel wearing chaps. He's apparently stealing Shawn Michaels' gimmick now. He hops on his hog and rides off while evil uncle spots him. Moody mullet music as Hulkster rides home. Hogan ponders his dilemma, looking thoughtful. Thoughtful as he can look.
He's quite crap at looking thoughtful.
Well, apparently, according to TV Guide, he looks like he's got diarrhea.
I mean, first a stealth malfunction, then I couldn't maintain full thrust commitment.
Well, it's a tough one.
You know, I feel like this whole thing is my fault.
How so?
Did I ever tell you that Spence saved my life? Took a bullet in his chest that was coming at me. That bullet would have killed me. Now, I don't know, I feel like I'm killing his dream.
Well, everyone has a dream that'll never come true.
Do you? Tell me a dream.
No way!
Oh, come on, tell me a dream.
No, it's stupid. Besides, it'll never come true anyway, so...
Tell me a dream, and I'll tell you my dream. Come on. Talk to me.
Okay. Ever since I was a kid, I wanted to go to Italy, to Florence, and apprentice myself out to an artist, and sculpt nudes out of Carrara marble. Like Michelangelo's David. There is nothing in the world as sensual as running your hands over the contours of the marble, closing your eyes and feeling the smooth, cool texture. That's rough human strength. I told you it was stupid.
No, not at all. Listen, if you ever need a model, I can...
Well, what's yours?
My what?
Your dream.
My dream? My dream. It's similar to your... I mean, it's not about marble or anything. It's about a real woman. Actually, it's about you, Kelly. I dream about the two of us connecting. Conjugal kind of way.
Well, there you go. Like I said, some dreams will never come true.
Back at the beach bar, and Kelly chats with Brew, who tells her how he fucked the boat. Like, broke it, not... Yeah. He tells Kelly how Hogan took a bullet in the chest for him. What a man. And now Brute is repaying him by failing him. Kelly's dream is to go to Italy and sculpt out of marble, and Brew's dream is to nail Kelly.
But like, it's not just to sculpt with marble. She makes it into this really kind of seedy, dirty, quasi-erotic thing. Because she talks about, like, stroking it and being smooth but hard and things, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Very much makes it that.
She does kind of like a cock gesture as well when she's...
But she also says, not only is this her dream, she's had it since she was a child. Don't know how long the erotic...
Maybe it just morphed into something more erotic when she passed puberty.
That was a bit, I thought, a bit dodgy, but yeah, Brew's dream is much more direct.
Well, first, no, he tries to blag that he wants to go to Europe too, but then he's like, wait, I dream of connecting with you, which is too bad, because at this point, I thought Hogan was just going to nail her.
But also, he drops his shot glass into his pint glass as a bit of a metaphor.
Yeah. Mm.
She knocks him back anyway. She's not interested. Hulk tells Megan he'll marry her, and she demands he propose to her in public. And this is the worst proposal ever.
It is.
Yeah, he really oversells it.
He eats her face so everyone can see, and the kid spots it. He makes out that she proposed/begged him to marry her a month ago. And yeah, so at this point I realised he wasn't the dad because the kid was all excited about him potentially being the dad. Beefcake appears and is jealous. They get a round of applause for their performance as Brew also looks on. Jealous.
Yeah.
Did you not spot this at all, Adam?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Giant Gonzalez, yes, Giant Gonzalez, lifts some crates that normal people can't pick up. Some other dude wants to launch rockets into Wales.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that signifies him as a bad person.
Yeah, that's just showing his intent.
Giant Gonzalez is sporting a tremendous mullet.
Mm.
A giant mullet, some might say.
This evil bloke has an evil boss named Mr. Kilmer, not Val.
Who is he?
He wants the little girl's necklace he spots in a newspaper, because apparently it's the key to some sort of fortune. Yeah, you realise who Mr. Kilmer is, right?
Who is he?
Paul? I'm less inclined you'll know who this is.
I definitely recognise his face, and I do believe that he will be a name that I'll recognise, but I don't know who it is.
Adam, no idea? It's fucking Flash Gordon.
That's Flash Gordon?
That's Sam Jones, yeah.
Wow. Shit.
Flash Gordon's an evil guy.
Apparently so.
With an evil plot to get a girl's necklace to lead him to treasure on an island. This is a really silly show, isn't it?
Hogan, wearing silly shades, practices saying I love you to Brew. He's not practicing saying I love you to Brew. He's practicing saying I love you to Brew to practice saying it to Megan. Sorry.
I've put that he's dressed like a twat for his wedding. He looks like a right dickhead.
I've put snazzy bow tie, action man bow tie.
Brew says he loves him too, and I thought they were going to run off and get married at this point. Hogan is wearing a white suit for his wedding. Nicole, from earlier, this is the skank he was banging behind the sand dune, is upset that Hulk is getting married, and I imagine so is probably Linda. Nicole gives him a snog, so Brew distracts Megan, but their ruse is exposed. Megan threatens to kill Nicole.
Yeah, that came out of nowhere. I just noticed as well that she just happens to be walking around pretty much just with her nightie or whatever open, just showing her bra off.
Yeah,
I noticed that.
She's pissed, understandably, that Hogan is snogging other women before their wedding, and she wants to sort out the prenup. Hogan spots the lipstick covering his face, and he's like...
Well, Brew points it out to him, doesn't
he? Yeah.
Because Brew just rubs his face a little bit.
Ominous music as Flash Gordon turns up at the hotel.
Please, join hands. Bonding of two souls in celebration of their deep...
No community life. Property.
It is a precious...
I don't want any.
I'm not getting it.
...of beauty and strength.
It's only 50%. I want controlling interest of thunder.
Drop dead.
51%, or I'll walk and you'll have nothing.
And neither will you.
A ribbon of love.
Without leverage, I'd have nothing anyway.
Do you... Megan, Irene, Whitaker.
I'll say no.
Randall, good luck,
Amy. Try me.
To love and to cherish, till death do you part.
I do.
Do you, Randolph?
On one condition. I want 51%.
Of the hotel? When hell freezes?
Of the skull.
Love and two cherish till death do you part?
Never.
Then I'll say no.
You wouldn't dare.
Leverage works both ways.
I do.
Oh, good.
And
if anyone knows of any reason why these two people should not be married, let him speak now.
Or forever hold his peace.
This marriage is a deception and a fraud. It's based on commercial enterprise, not love, and I shall reveal it as such.
Finish the ceremony?
The ring. Do you have a ring? Repeat after me. With this ring, I thee wed.
With this ring, I thee wed.
I now pronounce you husband and wife.
Inappropriate wedding music plays. It was like some bizarre reggae calypso.
It was very, very silly.
Hogan has a white suit and a blue do-rag to get married in.
He's really not taking this seriously. And neither is Jimmy Hart.
Yeah, Jimmy Hart's wearing like a honky-tonk man jacket.
Yeah.
And Brutus Beefcake is wearing some god-awful Hawaiian shirt. Hogan and Megan manage to have a conversation in front of the vicar that he doesn't hear.
Yeah.
Like, I was hoping the vicar was going to pull off a fake face, actually.
It's like, be Eric Bischoff
underneath. Yeah.
It's like, I want 51%. No, I'm blackmailing you, effectively. Yeah.
Hogan uses his creative control to get 51% to vote. Evil Uncle speaks up and says the wedding is a fraud, and everyone just ignores
it. Yeah, there's no other reference to that whatsoever.
Bearing in mind, I think he proposed to her either earlier that
day,
or yesterday.
Day, yeah.
Oh, I've never been to a wedding where someone's disrupted it like that, but I'm pretty sure it has to stop, doesn't it?
And I'm pretty sure everyone like pays attention to it when it happens.
Yeah, if something like that happens, surely it should be up to the vicar to investigate it fully.
I've always wanted to speak up at a wedding, just to do it.
I get that compulsion.
Wait till Adam gets married. You'll have loads of reasons.
I won't be the only one, though. There'll be about eight other women that stand up.
You said you loved me.
I'm so going to turn heel at your wedding. I should have done it at yours, Scrivens.
What a day.
Yeah, well, it was a good day. Yeah.
Everyone ignores the evil uncle anyway. And Beefcake cries, I guess, because he always imagined it would be him marrying all. Jimmy Hart and Brutus are also, yes, inappropriately dressed for this wedding.
Well, not just wrote, it's a lovely service.
Did you genuinely think so?
No, it was deplorable.
Mrs. Kilmer wants to look at the little girl's necklace, and she has an accent that I would compare to Kendra from Buffy.
Yeah.
My name's Kendra. She takes the little girl to Mr. Kilmer, who tries to buy it, but she's too smart to sell it for $20 or for $100, but she's not smart enough to realise when he offers to tighten it and just runs away with it.
Yeah. That old trick, let me tighten your necklace.
The random stranger that you've just met and tries to buy it. Hogan spots Jess in distress and chases Flash Gordon. He tackles him and tries to grab it, but it breaks and flies everywhere.
To be fair, it's a not bad spear.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably the best wrestling move that he's ever done.
A brief fist fight with Flash Gordon is broken up by Army Edition Giant Gonzalez, who lifts Hogan a clear 20 foot in the air.
It is filmed in that way.
Despite having not been able to chokeslam Harvey Whippleman. He throws Hogan across the beach as Kilmer scrabbles for the necklace beads. Hogan whacks Gonzalez with a surfboard and rakes his eyes before Gonzalez launches him in through a hut.
The expression on Giant Gonzalez's face when he gets hit by that surfboard is priceless.
Gonzalez escapes in Kilmer's limo, despite clearly not fitting.
Yeah.
The only way I can imagine he escaped was he just laid along the entire back row with that door left open. Yeah,
because the height of the limo is about up to his knee.
Hulk and the gang try to assemble Jess's necklace. It's a puzzle.
I've put here, ooh, I like puzzles.
Jess ignores her mum, but wants her to have sex with the Hulkster.
Yeah, it's like, it's your honeymoon. Night. Yeah, your wedding night, it's your honeymoon. Get together while I'm still here, completing my puzzle.
Hogan smokes a cigar, which appalls Megan. They work out the necklace is a map to some islands as Brew and Kelly turn up. Andrew the Gimp Gilmore.
Yeah. Brilliant.
The Gimp. There's the treasure.
There's a gimmick. Made the necklace whilst in prison. He was a $3 million robber mastermind and a suspect in over a dozen other unsolved robberies.
But that was from 20 years ago. So $3 million 20 years ago. Think of the
That's 1973.
The value now, yeah.
He was murdered in prison after making this necklace for his wife. Jess looks under the table and finds a map, and everyone decides to sort of get under the table all at once and have a look, not take it in turns or anything.
Yeah.
Fire up thunder. We leave first thing in the morning. Megan insists on coming. Hogan doesn't want her to come. She insists on coming.
And seriously, what is she wearing?
She's got like a
safari kind of...
Yeah, a British safari, very, colonial times hat on.
Yeah, with this kind of weird scarf thing around her face, sunglasses, but then kind of like a bikini top and these weird kind of weird length shorts.
Yeah, no one would ever knowingly wear that.
It is, even for the early 90s, a blindingly bad fashion decision.
Kelly babysits Jess while sculpting. She wants to go to the island. And seriously, what's up with her accent? Gonzalez turns up and looks menacingly at them. Meanwhile, on Thunder, Hogan ignores his new wife who wants his attention. Jessica has drawn a map for the bad guys who have kidnapped her.
She's a clever girl.
Yeah. Hogan tolerates his new wife and her moods by carrying her over swamps when she wants to be carried and putting her down when she doesn't. Bad guys spot Thunder, and Kilmer is just such a 90s villain. He has no motivation for being evil other than simply being evil.
Do you notice that one of his goons is Savio Vega?
Well, I thought one looked a little bit like Billy Gunn, but it wasn't.
It's not actually Savio Vega, but it's someone dressed exactly like Savio Vega.
Hogan climbs a tree to look around the island while triumphant music plays. Megan is sitting on the X where the treasure's buried.
He climbs a tree. And it's a small island, right?
Yeah.
But he doesn't notice Flash Gordon's fucking mega boat that's there to kill him.
But also, you know when they use that kind of weird hook thing to kind of anchor on the tree and climb up?
Yeah.
How did they get that back down?
And also, how did he get it up there? Because I noticed this, right? You see him get the hook out, and then he climbs up, and at the top, the hook is wrapped around the top of the tree. How did that happen?
Hogan attempts to lift a massive rock. It's not as easy as the one that was in Baywatch.
But it was still pretty easy considering the size of the rock.
There's a tunnel underneath it. Brew, Hulk and Megan climb down. Megan gets a massive snake around her leg and Hulk kisses it. The snake, not her leg.
When he removes the snake, she says, "I don't like disgusting things climbing up my leg." And he says, "I'll remember that for later."
Yeah.
That's rather creepy.
Mm.
Brew spots the booty, the treasure, not Hulk's booty. He spied that already. They unwrap it and there's gold and more necklaces. They have no chance to celebrate, however, as the bad guys show up and demand Brew and Hulk give the treasure to them, or they'll shoot the new Mrs. Hulk. They relinquish the treasure and trap Hulk and Co. under the rock. And when they put the rock over the hole, it's then instantly pitch black.
Yeah.
But then we cut back to them, it's now light again.
No, it's fine, they've got some glow sticks.
Kilmer and company decide they want Thunder, but I bet Thunder turns on them. In the hole, Brew drinks whole water and declares it salt water.
Mm.
Thunder won't let the bad guys in. It then electrocutes them, so they decide to tow it instead of jacking it.
Yeah.
Now, if they were having an electric bolt shoved up through them, would they be able to actually throw themselves off the boat? Or would it lock their muscles?
Depends how big the shock is, I'd imagine.
Hogan makes glow sticks or something before he goes for a swim. He tries to find an exit and swims underwater for an obscene amount of time.
He's half whale, apparently.
Yeah. And he hulked up before going there.
Mm.
Megan does raise that point, and yes, Brew claims he's half whale.
And that he's got some... He's kind of oxygenating his blood.
Hogan's string that's keeping him attached to Brew snaps on a rock, and he spots an exit. Hulk tries to swim back to Brew, but he's lost. Brew strips down to try and find Hulk, but he submerges.
Right, now, at this point, I've got to think, what a wanker. Because you found an exit. Why don't you just get out, go back along the island, and lift the rock? You can do that. We've seen you do it.
Yeah,
but no, he decides
point.
To risk dying
Brew,
by going
Brew
back.
Helped him move the rock.
He could have done it. He's Hulk Hogan.
He's got thunder. It's probably got like a massive thing that can like jack it.
If he can track somebody who points a gun at him, it can probably move a rock, yeah.
Yeah. Brew stays undressed anyway, and Megan strips down, so it's a bit less gay.
Megan looks pretty good, actually, when she's got rid of all that stupid outfit that she's wearing.
Yeah.
But she's very, very pale.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
They use some sort of tent system for oxygen.
I thought that was quite clever.
Okay.
Yeah, that would work.
Megan faints while obviously Brew and Hulk are fine. Miraculously, they swim up underneath and directly into Thunder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Seriously, directly into Thunder.
Hogan finds time to paint himself in camo makeup.
This is the stupidest thing
And does it really well, including like quite good detail at the side and back of his head without mixing colours.
Also, why is he painted camo when he's going onto a white boat?
Well, it's all right, because it was still camouflaging.
It's psychological warfare, he says.
He does say that, yes.
Because Megan makes out the point of why the hell are you doing that?
For no real reason.
Hogan sneaks onto Flash Gordon's boat. Hogan takes out bad guys with stealth and Vulcan nerve hold things. And he looks like a fucking idiot.
Yes.
He has a karate fight with some guy, except the guy does a load of karate and then he just punches him. They stole the spot from Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's an attempt at that, isn't it?
Oh no, it's Giant Gonzalez. He knocks Hulk down with a barrel and gives him a good beating.
I thought he was turning into Donkey Kong.
Gonzalez chokes Hulk with a metal bar, but Hogan hulks up and hits the giant with a chair before throwing him down into the boat. Flash Gordon, however, has Kelly and Jess, and some guy sniffs Kelly's hair. Kilmer plans to feed Hogan to sharks. Again, not the shark. They tie him up and throw him overboard. Hogan sinks, and because they're evil, they just decide to throw women and children over the boat as well.
But I like the way that they kind of tie him up. But again, they're just poorly tethered. These baddies, do they not watch any films at all? I mean, I don't watch many films, but I know that baddies do a bad job generally. They have very little attention to detail.
And also, they've just lost their collateral by throwing that woman and child overboard.
It's the it's the Austin Powers thing, isn't it? Yeah. Why didn't they just shoot Hulk Hogan in the head?
They've got guns.
Yeah. And that's a clear fire away.
Megan spots her kid drowning and is hysterical. Brew is obviously more concerned about Hulk. Hogan hulks out of the chains and Brew appears to save him. Back on Thunder, Megan is happy to see Jess and Brew finally gets a snog out of Kelly.
Well, there's that brilliant bit. What are you doing? Giving you mouth to mouth. I don't need mouth to mouth, but I'm going to kiss you anyway.
And he says, remind me to save your life more often.
I like the way that Brew takes those oxygen tanks out under the water and he gives one to Hogan.
Yeah.
And one to the woman. And doesn't bother giving one to the girl who's clearly got the smallest lung capacity and is in the most danger.
I love your attention to detail, Adam. It might be your best thing about you.
They break Thunder free from Flash Gordon, and he has no idea who might, possibly, potentially, I don't know, might be in the boat.
Yeah. Kilmer has got rid of all of them apart from the woman and Brew.
Kilmer orders his lackeys to missile Thunder. Brew engages the thrusters on Thunder, and they malfunction again. Why did he not fix that?
We get the exact same sequence from earlier on.
He does fix it by kicking it, though.
Yeah. It kicks a keyboard, and they work. Hogan spins Thunder around, and the missile follows them. Kilmer is shocked by this, not knowing the capabilities of his own missiles. They abandon their boat. Drama. Thunder avoids the missile and it blows up Kilmer's boat.
Well, the thing is that no one dies in this show. That's why they all jump off before it blows up. But John Gonzalez was still under the deck. Probably he's dead.
But they do say, like, we'll call the Coast Guard to go and rescue them as well, didn't they?
No, did they?
Pick some barracudas out of the water.
Brew asks about the treasure, but Hulk chooses to quote Phil Collins, "There's always another day in paradise." And this is where things get really
Is that when
weird.
They know there's going to be a second series?
Yeah. Then we get to super creepy, rapey honeymoon day.
Hang on. I would love to see a Hulk Hogan Tony Hare skit. Give me a second series of Thunder in Paradise, you shit.
smell my cheese.
Darling, what's taking so long? Wow, you look incredible.
You were incredible today, darling.
How'd you like some champagne?
Maybe later.
Great.
They discovered your device. They know.
My devices have never been discovered.
I said fake it, not make it. Move your hand.
Hulk relaxes in bed and puts some sexy music on while Megan puts makeup on her chest. She rocks up in sexy lingerie and Hogan pops his cork.
Yeah.
Literally.
Could that be a metaphor?
This is as bad as the masturbation scene in No Holds Barred, which you haven't seen, Paul, but yeah.
And it's made even worse by the fact that Patrick McNee has a camera filming them from some other room.
Yes, so Hogan has his way with Megan while her uncle, her blood relative, watches on CCTV.
But he doesn't have his way, but we think he might be having his way, but it turns out it's not having his way.
And it's like when he sees the woman on the jet ski in Baywatch, he makes these kind of horribly painful, yeah. pervy noises all the time.
And then she says, you're supposed to be faking it, not making it, or something. Get your hand off. Yeah.
But Uncle Edward's mate is convinced of Hogan and Megan's love.
Yeah.
And then obviously
he sees something in Hogan's acting that we don't.
That's her uncle. I'm just going to, reiterate that.
I'll just keep watching, see what happens.
Yeah.
But I've also put, she's very ungrateful, that woman.
But she does make the point that her daughter would have never been out there if Hogan hadn't given her the necklace in the first place.
She wouldn't have a hotel if it wasn't for Hogan.
Yeah.
She should at least let him get some.
No, that comes across as a bit wrong, Adam.
Bit
don't rapey, say that.
Adam, yeah.
I'm not saying that. I just think she should be more grateful.
Yeah,
she doesn't have to display that gratefulness through sexual favours.
That is gratitude, isn't it?
But what a bizarre ending. What a bizarre ending.
What a bizarre show. It was ridiculous.
What did you think?
I thought it was shit.
I was quite entertained. the certain, it was like, it's one of those things, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying it was a good show, but I'm saying I was entertained.
I would have preferred it if it wasn't 1.75 hours.
Yeah, see, that was the thing. I assumed it would be an hour long.
40-minute sort of thing, but it was so long.
And then I pressed play and it was an hour and 44 minutes, and I thought, fuck. Sorry.
Yeah,
I'm really sorry.
It's a bit painful to wade through.
Yeah. It's like Hawk looked at two really popular David Hasselhoff shows, Baywatch and Knight Rider, and said, yeah, mash them up, brother, I'll do it. All I will say for this pilot episode is that I watched a bit of Thunder in Paradise 2, or the one from the middle of the show's run, after this, and it was definitely worse. And
wow.
The kid's now a different actress as well, and Hogan and Brew and her live together in some sort of gay dad setup, which is nothing wrong with. I live with a man, and it's fine. Giant Gonzalez also turned up in that episode as well, playing a different character who's some sort of Saudi Arabian prince.
Okay.
Well, he is versatile.
Yeah, and Typhoon was in it as well. He managed to get a bunch of his mates' jobs. So that was different.
That was weird.
Which of the two did you prefer?
Baywatch by a country fucking mile.
I'd say I preferred Baywatch, but mainly due to its length.
Yeah, I'll go with Baywatch as well. I think it was despite the bizarre skin cancer storyline being quite jarring, it was quite fun for Flair's promo and Macho turning up at the beach and going, what's going on here?
But I would say that it's kind of that little comment that I had before when I was talking about, Hogan had the choice about drugs or healthy and whatever. It came across very strongly to me that it's a very big moral message that they're trying to send out with that show.
Well, I think with the show in general, and with this, they're sending the message again that Hawk's like an all-American hero and he's good with kids and that kind of thing. Who's your MVP?
In all seriousness, and probably for a different reason to Adam, probably in terms of acting, Pamela Anderson, I actually thought her acting was quite good.
In all serious, and probably for a different reason to Paul, it was Pamela Anderson.
Well, I'm not going to complete that. I'm just going to say Yasmin Bleeth, because I always preferred Yasmin Bleeth.
Really?
I don't know if that's a blonde versus brunette thing, but yeah.
But
I always thought she was cuter.
But what did she do in the show that you liked so much?
She greased up her leg.
I quite like that.
Fair dues.
And as I know, there's definitely one here. Mullet of the night, Adam.
It's Giant Gonzalez for his wonderful performance Thunder in Paradise.
They've got to be a special mention for Tom in Baywatch.
For Tom's outstanding, odd effort, yes.
I mean, I wouldn't strictly say it was a mullet personally, but I just liked his hair.
Yeah, it deviates slightly from the real mullet archetype, but he's done something with it. He's a visionary.
Yeah. You know, as a man, sometimes you just look at another man's hair and you think,
I wish
I had his hair.
The Drew from Neighbours.
Yeah.
Do you know who I look at and think that?
Everyone.
but specifically, Carlito. I wish I had Carlito's hair.
If you had Carlito's hair, that would be amazing.
So that was quite different. We've not done anything quite like that before. Did you enjoy it?
I did.
Yeah, it was quite good fun.
Like I say, there is Thunder in Paradise 2 and 3, and there is there is more episodes of Baywatch with wrestlers in them. So, down the line, maybe.
I definitely remember an episode with Giant Gonzalez being in Baywatch, and he was like an outcast that lived under a bridge carving things out of wood.
And I know for a fact there's definitely a Shawn Michaels one, so.
Yeah. So possibly. Possibly. I'm less thrilled about doing more Thunder in Paradise, I'm going to be honest.
See, that's what I think, although there was definitely stupidness in the plot and lack of quality in the acting. For me, it didn't spoil it. because I don't really watch it for that thing. I thought there was enough distraction just to keep me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like it's an overly complicated plot.
It was bizarre in that, you watch the first half an hour and you think the whole thing is going to revolve around the uncle and getting the hotel back from the uncle,
and
then it just diverts into this whole sunken treasure thing.
It is almost very much like it's episodic made into a film, because it's almost like got those different themes. It's got the kind of the Cuban bit at the start, it's got the bit with the hotel, and it's got the bit with the kind of the Kilmer
and then
guy.
The bizarre sex scene at the end.
I will say this probably had a massive budget.
Oh god, yeah.
Like, you know, you've got big physical effects, you've got location shootings, you've got a huge cast,
and it's filmed at Disney, so yeah, they must have had some money.
I mean, there's a lot of cash behind this.
You've got a boat.
Yeah,
they've had to make
a child's jet ski.
And right, the boat kind of looks cool. But yeah, the writing on it's awful. It's like Comic Sans.
Because you have to Photoshop that.
Because that is the most threatening of all the fonts.
It's just really, and in canary yellow as well. It's just really shit.
Yeah.
It could have had something more intimidating on it. Yeah.
There you go. That's Baywatch and Thunder in Paradise.
I think my main problem with Thunder in Paradise is basically Hulk Hogan. I can't get over the fact that he's really terrible. And the more I hear about him, the more I think he's a terrible person.
He's got diarrhea, mate.
Adam, well, I've got news for you. Thunder in Paradise is Hulk Hogan.
But if you'd have had Thunder in Paradise and supplanted Hulk Hogan for Stone Cold, say, I might have liked it a lot more.
Okay, so which of these had the bigger effect on wrestling? And what effects did these have on wrestling?
Well, I would argue Baywatch had really no effect. I don't think that can be contributed towards WCW's upturn in quality or ratings. It was, like I say, it probably brought more eyes to them, but whether they stayed or not, I don't know. And Thunder in Paradise's effect on wrestling is kind of more incidental, like I say, just in terms of that it was filmed next door. Yeah. But you've also got the element that it failed, and this was Hogan's big thing to get him away from wrestling, and it's failed. So maybe its failure kind of brought him back into like, oh, okay, maybe I should give WCW a chance.
Mm.
It's just one of those things, like, I thought we should do it in that it's an interesting side thing to do that's a bit different from everything we've done before.
And lots of people wanted it.
And to be fair, tons of people asked for both Baywatch and Thunder in Paradise, so I thought, well, you know what, let's just roll them into one nice ball and watch them together.
Mm.
So that all that leaves me to do is wrap up. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/NewGenerationProjectPodcast. We are on Twitter
at the completely bemusing
New Gen Podcast. We're on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/NewGenPodcast, and all of our episodes go up on Stitcher Radio as well. All of our episodes are available as soon as we put them up on PileDriverWrestling.net, and the old catalogue is going up one by one by one on Botchamania.com. Calling spots as well. Buy that. Why should people buy that?
Because it's good. Is there anything of note in it this month?
Well, the next issue, which should be out in mid-December, features our interview with Bret the Hitman Hart and my article about 1995, which we've just finished.
And I believe there's an article on women's wrestling.
On women's wrestling. I really like the cover for this one, actually. I might ask if I can get like a blown-up print of it. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
And nice. What else is in it that's caught my eye? Jimmy Havoc Part 2.
Yeah, ton of good stuff. Yeah. Callingspots.com. Yeah. Go along and buy it and read about 1995 and Bret Hart and all that other good stuff. As ever, you can rate, review and subscribe in iTunes and leave us 5 stars and a lovely review, if you don't mind. Episode 27, we will finally begin our journey into 1996. And we are starting at the very beginning with our second Raw versus Nitro episode.
Another thing that's been quite widely requested. Actually.
Yes, absolutely. So I put the thread up on Facebook a while ago of what people wanted us to do. And one of the things that actually was asked very early on and has been re-asked as part of this was the Raw Bowl. Yeah. So we're going to do that and we're going to compare it with the Nitro episode from the same day. Looking forward to that?
Yeah.
Most definitely, yeah.
It's not 1995.
Hey!
Happy days. My name is Stuart Brooks. I shall say goodbye.
I'm Adam Weitz. Goodbye.
I'm Paul Scrimmins. I'll see you at some later date. Bye. Those drums sound good, don't they? I like that, yeah. Good bass as well.
Some people stand in the darkness, afraid to step into the light. Out of my sight.
always ready. I won't let you out of my sight.
Like a rock.